Saturday night.
This is Now That's Weird
with Ross Hemsworth.
Zoink, Scoob! I smell something weird!
It's not weird. It's Ross Hemsworth.
You're listening to Now That's Weird with Ross Hemsworth.
Email the show, ross@nowthatsweird.co.uk.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Glastonbury Radio, you clever little humanoids.
For nearly 20 years, Nexus has been the world's leading alternative news magazine. Read a selection of articles at nexusmagazine.com. Published every 2 months, Nexus is your best source of hard-to-get information behind the news, health, UFOs, future science. If you don't believe everything your government and their experts tell you is true, where do you look instead? Phone Nexus Magazine today on 01342 322 854 or see nexusmagazine.com. Available at all good news agents. Visit the show's official website, nowthatsweird.co.uk, and meet the team behind the show. Are you truly happy? Do you feel that there's more to life but don't know where to find it? More to Life magazine is the spiritual magazine to enlighten you with simple, easy-to-read articles on everything from angels, stress management and healing, through to Reiki, yoga and meditation. For just £13.50 for a year's subscription, we have the tools to help you discover what you really want from life. Visit moretolifemag.co.uk to find out more about us. Exploration is the path to a better life.
Hi, this is your own pal Ozzy Osbourne. I love listening to Ross Hemsworth and his guests on Now That's Weird. They make me feel f***ing normal.
a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space itself and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area that we call... Now that's weird.
Yes, hello everyone, welcome back. It's been, it seems like ages, doesn't it? It's in fact only 2 weeks since the last time I was live, but last week, as you know, I was at Weirdo 9. That's a great name, isn't it? Weirdo. Weirdo 9, which was a fantastic conference in Warminster. Got some lovely write-ups, and thank you to all of you that have actually done that. There's lots of people putting on forums about how great it was and how good my little bits were in between. I was comparing, trying to sort of stick the show together a bit. So thank you to all of you that said such nice things. That was really cool. It was a great conference. The standout speakers for me were Mike Oram, who was fantastic, and he's going to be on this show next week, and Nick Pope as well, very good presentation. But to be honest, they were all great presentations. We've got Nick Redfern coming up soon as well, who was another great speaker at the event, talking about the Men in Black and what really happens. That was quite intriguing as well. So a great conference. My next one is in Blackpool on the 3rd of October. I'm going to be speaking at Lytham St Anne's, doing a big interdimensional talk, in fact, up at Lytham St Anne's on the 3rd and 4th of October. So if you're up that way towards Blackpool, you can get your tickets now. If you search Probe International Conference on Google, it'll take you to the website, which is cool. Now, Edge Media Television, quickly got to tell you, they've run into some problems, which is a hell of a shame. They've cut down on their broadcast hours from this week or from Monday, and apparently it's going to be stopping at 7 o'clock every evening. They've sold the 7 till 10 spot to a shopping channel. Now, I think this is dreadful. It goes to prove what's happening in our world today, and that the one TV station that's actually getting the truth out there and trying to let us all know what's going on is being strangled. They're not getting the advertising revenue. They're not getting the support. Is that any surprise to any of us knowing what's going on in this day and age and this so-called society we live in? And remember that word society, because we're going to be talking about that quite a lot in the next 2 hours. But I think it's a dreadful thing. Edge Media have done a wonderful job getting that information out there, and to think that they've had to cut back on their hours and may yet have to go even further. So if you know anyone out there that will sponsor Edge TV or get involved, then do get in contact with them via Edge Media TV on the website. Now also, 2012, we've been talking about it for some time here on the show. There's a massive amount of interest on what might actually be happening in or around 2012. So I've decided to go out on a limb, I suppose, and put on a 2012 conference next year. I'm going to hold it in Bath. I've already got companies now showing an interest in sponsoring it, which is fantastic. I've had 6 or 7 speakers already come to me and say, look, we'll do that for nothing because we want to be part of such an event. It's going to be a corker. It's going to be in Bath, as I say, over a weekend, probably August, September time, and it's going to be called the 2012 conference. So put dates in, well, you can't put dates in your diary if you haven't got them yet, but make a note of it that you're going to have to be there, because if you want to know what's really going to happen in 2012, you cannot afford not to be at that conference. Now, this week I was absolutely delighted to watch my first guest in action again. It's the second time I've seen him speak in as many weeks, and he played the assembly rooms at Glastonbury to an absolutely packed house. Over 150 people apparently turned away at the door because there just wasn't enough seating. That annoyed me, because I think they could have got a lot more in, but because of these stupid political correctness laws we have, and fire laws and such like, there was all this spare room at the back of the hall that wasn't full. But they have a capacity apparently of 175, and that's it. They wouldn't let anybody else in, which I found a little bit annoying. A lot of people missed a fantastic speech. Now, you've heard me talk about him before, and we did do a short interview with him at the Off the Grid Festival, so I'm not going to go into too much time explaining too much about John. Needless to say, he starts his talk with, "I'm just a humble carpenter." That rings a few bells, doesn't it? He came on stage and he shook the foundations of not only us, but everybody in the audience, with what he stumbled across. And he and I are very, very similar in our backgrounds. We've come through the rough edge, if you like. We've been both rebellious as teenagers. We've both been in a bit of trouble in the past, shook it off and changed direction. And I sat in that audience thinking to myself, this guy is just so like me, and yet he's so far above where I am, and I look up to him. On the phone right now is John Harris. John, good evening.
Hi, Russ. How are you doing?
Absolutely great. Thank you so much for spending the time with us this evening. We really appreciate this.
Thank you for inviting me.
No problem at all. Well, let's start at the beginning, John. Tell us how you got involved in all of this and how you set up tpuc.org.
Well, Well, it's quite a strange... Well, it's very simple, actually. I was working for a local building company as a carpenter, and it goes back to 9/11. I was working... To start the story, I suppose, properly, I was working on a house on the road doing a big roof for a bloke, and the bloke come out and shouted at us and said, "Something's happened in America, you better come down and have a look here." So we all... me and my mate shot down the ladder, went indoors and stood in his kitchen dining room, watching the telly, and the first plane had just hit the tower. And to be quite honest with you, it was completely surreal. I just couldn't take it in. I don't suppose a lot of people could take it in. And then, obviously, progressively, we watched it, and then the next plane hit it, and then the towers come down, and I was talking to my partner, Heb, about it, and, yeah, it was just couldn't believe it. And then didn't really get involved in anything about it. I carried on being sort of a businessman and whatnot. And then some years later, only a few years, actually, a couple of years later, I was working on exactly the same street, but quite a long way down the street, doing another route. And one of the lads went to university, and he just brought out one day this film called Lord Boost Change 2, and he said, "Look, have a look at this, you might find it interesting." So I took the DVD, and that night I went home and I put it on the side, and a few nights later I actually watched it. I was quite interested in what it was saying, but I was still a businessman at the time, and you know, I was more worried about sort of where the next penny was going to come from, and you know, I didn't really take much notice of it. But I watched it again, and I saw a camera shake, and it's part of the film where just before the towers had come down, when the towers had obviously been hit, and they went up into an adjacent building, and they put a camera on a tripod, and just before the towers came down, the camera shook, and all it said to me was that there must have been a massive explosion for that to happen. Now, I went through the normal stuff, I suppose, that you would go, you know, was there a gas leak, was there, you know, trying to, you know, like, put a bit of logic to it, was there something exploding, but it just didn't make any sense. And then I started to look at it more in depth, and I watched the film again and again to kind of like clarify a few points, and watched the bits where it was saying there was explosions and stuff like that. To be quite honest with you, and I will be honest with you, Russ, I don't actually know what happened at that time to me. I sat one night in front of the computer, decided that I wanted to get involved. I'd never built a website, I'd never even registered a domain, it was all new to me, so the only website I'd ever been involved with was a website that I had for my carpentry company, which was a very simple, very basic thing. So I decided, I registered this domain, and I was looking at names, and I kept looking, I had a piece of paper, and I was writing names out, and the name that kept sticking with me was the People's United Collective. So I started to look at this, and I was looking at, like, sort of TPUC, and I always remember this. I went on there, and I found TPUC.com, and it was the pop-up campus or something out in Texas.
Mm.
So I registered .org, and that's all I did. I registered the .org, and I started about building this website, and I built it out of some authoring software via Microsoft, and I didn't do a very good job of it, but it worked.
Mm.
And I started talking about 9/11, and obviously I got involved in 7/7, and again, loads of discrepancies about the official version and obviously what people are saying. And all I wanted to do was really help. That's all I really wanted to do. In doing this, I started to look at, I don't know, people like Mr. Blair and a few other people in the government, because they were being mentioned in different reports about 7/7, and Ian Blair, the Metropolitan Police at me, and things that he'd said and bits and pieces. And I started to look at other bits and pieces about 9/11 and talking about it on forums and stuff like that. I got quite heavily involved in it, and well, to be quite honest with you, I got obsessed. I think that's one of the main problems with the internet, is the fact that we do become very obsessed with it, and it kind of sucks us into it. So I started to do all this. But what happened was that people just started to contact me out of the blue and started to give me information about the law, the legal world, Parliament, you know, the whole structure of our constitution, the structure, you know, and history. And to be quite honest with you, I didn't have a clue what I was looking at. I'm just a simple carpenter. I wouldn't say I'm intelligent or anything like that. I'm just very, very simple. So a lot of this and the words being used, I didn't understand. Didn't understand it at all. And to this day, a lot of it I still don't understand. But what happened over a period of months was that this information started to, I don't know how to put it, it just started to make sense to me. I was being told things that made sense. And even though I didn't really understand it, I knew what I was being told was true. Then, latter part of 2007 and that, I decided I was going to do a timeline of history. So I got my son's got an easel and it's got this paper on it, and I'd actually spoken to Brian Gerrish, a dear friend of mine, about it, and he said, "Look, get some wallpaper, roll it out on the floor, stick it together, and just do a timeline." So I did it with this paper from this easel, and it ended up about 6 foot across and 8 foot deep, this piece of paper. And it had all the kings and queens of England and kings and queens of Scotland, with popes, a Templar, law, as I understood it as being common law, statute law, which I didn't really understand at the time what it was. And it literally down this piece of paper, so it was actually in relation to each other. When I stood on it and looked down, I suddenly realised what was going on. I saw something. I saw a pattern. I saw things that would, things that were happening now had happened before, slightly differently, but it was nothing new. It was just the evolution of something. It was the modernisation of something. I saw what was happening with the kings and queens, and I could see a specific dynasty was needed. Why, and I couldn't understand why this dynasty would be needed. Why would they need this specific dynasty of kings and queens through England? So I started to really look at the history, and a very, very dear friend of mine who's gone to a better place now, by the name of Elizabeth, whose dad was a high court circuit judge, said to me once on his telephone call, she said, "Look at history. Just look at history and it will tell you everything you need to know."
I'm going to stop you there, John, because we're going to go to an ad break. But I've got to say, first of all, apologies for the phone line here. We seem to have a lot of noise in the background. So what I'm going to do, John, during the ad break, is I'm going to ring you back and see if we can get just a clearer line, because there seems to be a lot of background noise. So stick with us. You're listening to Now That's Weird with me, Ross Hemsworth. We'll be back right after this.
Email the show, ross@nowthatsweird.co.uk.
Love and Light Events present
The Avalon Fairy Ball on Saturday the 3rd of October at the Glastonbury Town Hall, featuring artists Brian Frown, Josephine Wall, Linda Ravenscroft, Peter Prokovnik, Courtney Davis and more. At the Avalon Fairy Ball there'll be music from the Dolmen, fairy fashion shows and much, much more. The Fairy Fair is open between 11 and 5pm and entry is free. The Avalon Fairy Ball starts at 8pm.
Tickets are £20, available from thefairyball.co.uk or 01736 330 201.
Festival Times, the UK's number one free music paper. To find out where we're giving away our paper this summer, or keep up to date on band interviews and festival reviews, check out festivaltimes.co.uk for promotions and advertising, or to buy shares in the FT for only £1. Then call the team on 0203 2875 123. Festival Times, the new music paper for new music fans. Want to talk direct to potential customers? Then think digital, think video, think local, think In Your Face Media. In Your Face is a brand new media proposition targeted at affluent Bristol areas. We're currently installing digital wireless posters in wine bars, gyms and cafes, as well as doctors and dentist surgeries. And while they're waiting, they could be reading or watching your advertising messages. The technology is blindingly clever. The screens are operated wirelessly via the internet, so we can program the dynamic content that will appear on every individual screen. Slots start from as little as 2 pence. For more details, call us on 0117 942 0670 or visit our website at inyourfacemedia.co.uk. visiting Glastonbury and looking for somewhere nice to stay close to the town centre, then have a listen to what some of our previous guests have said about Barham's B&B. A hidden treasure, real luxury and excellent accommodation. Looked after so well in a really nice friendly atmosphere. Another 2 days at the best ever B&B. A friendly welcome, lovely rooms and a tasty breakfast awaits you at Barham's B&B. Check out our website at barhamsbnb.co.uk and for booking inquiries, simply email genehbarham@yahoo.co.uk or call us on 01458 837 875. Rates from just £35 a night. Take a walk back in time by visiting the Gauntlet Shopping Arcade in the High Street, Glastonbury. The Gauntlet is the town's newest shopping area, but set in an ancient walkway that oozes myth, legend, and real history. You'll find a wide range of shops offering a wide variety of products and always a friendly welcome. Visit thegauntlet.biz. The Gauntlet, Glastonbury's premier shopping thoroughfare. Visit the show's official website, nowthatsweird.co.uk, and meet the team behind the show.
Yes, don't forget, if you go on the website now, www.nowthatsweird.co.uk. If you're not already a member, just get yourself signed up. It's totally free. A penny will get you activated, and then you can get in the chat room and chat to some of our other listeners that are in there right now talking. Now, on the phone with me now, and hopefully a slightly clearer line, John Harris. We're talking about something that will affect every single one of you in the coming years ahead, especially first off if you're in the Commonwealth or in the UK, because what John's going to tell us about here certainly shocked me and shows that you can walk into a courtroom and actually have more power than the magistrate in the courtroom, and that's just quite phenomenal. But let's find out a little bit more now. John, let's see if we've got a better line this time.
Hello, mate.
Yeah, that sounds better. Now, John, let's start from the affidavit. You've actually served an affidavit on the Queen. Tell us exactly why you did that and what that was about.
The affidavit, to be quite honest with you, when I went down to Buckingham Palace, I'd been talking to a few experts, excuse me, I've been speaking to a few experts about law, because I'd just been... Basically, these people coming to me and started to explain what I'd been given and how powerful it was. And we were talking about sort of Magna Carta and common law. And at the time, I truly believed that Magna Carta was common law. So we looked at something called Article 61, which was a article wrote basically to secure the people of the land. It's a very interesting article because it talks about lawful hindrance. It talks about peaceful means. There's no violence involved in it whatsoever. And this struck a chord with me because I honestly believe, I honestly know in my heart that this nothing can ever be sorted by violence. Nothing. It has to be done peacefully. And this is what Article 61 allowed for. So a very dear friend of mine called Robin structured an affidavit on my behalf. And it's very biblical, but common law is very biblical. It comes basically from the Bible. The affidavit was basically structured on Article 61 that basically says, I'm not very happy with what's going on. I'm giving you 40 days to sort the problem out, i.e. dissolve Parliament, and basically get rid of these people who are causing all the problems, because at that time I honestly believed it was them who was causing the problems. I didn't realise there was a far bigger picture here. And in doing so, and I would serve another affidavit 40 days later if you haven't, I haven't been given any form of recourse. And that was, in all intents and purposes, take your governance away from me. I would reclaim my sovereignty. I didn't understand this at the time, and I didn't understand what I was being told, but basically, the people I was in communication with wanted someone to put their head on the chopping block. They wanted someone to stick their head up above the parapet and say, right, come on, have a shot at me. And I suppose I was the idiot who was going to do it. And at that time, I just knew in my heart that it was the right thing to do. Even though I didn't quite understand what I was doing, I understood that this was the right thing to do. So I toddled off down to Buckingham Palace one Saturday morning and with a couple of friends, with a video camera, and we went down and attempted to serve the papers on the Queen. We couldn't do it because the Queen wasn't there and no members of the household, which was quite unusual because it is quite a big house, and there should have been someone in. And the policeman on the gate said basically, no, you can't do it. So we structured a way of getting it to the Queen via special delivery from Trafalgar Square, which we did. Unbeknown to me, that these affidavits, we suddenly found out over a period of time that we were actually then using a maxim in law. Now, maxims are very, very powerful things in law. They are internationally recognised facts of law that can't be disputed, they can't be talked about, they basically are a fact. And the maxim we were using is an affidavit unrebutted standard truth in law. Now, this is very unique because my affidavit basically took back my sovereignty. In taking back my sovereignty, the only way that you can rebut this affidavit is to use 13 of my peers. Now, to be my peers, they must have done exactly the same. So in all intents and purposes, it's impossible because they'd have to accept the documents to be able to put 13 of my peers in a court, of the common court, to actually try to rebut what I'd done. In retrospective to this, what actually happened was we created the law. And the law we've created is the fact that we've now given the people of this island the ability to claim their sovereignty. And it's a very simple process. It's just a matter of two documents that go down there. You allow 40 days between the documents. This is how we structure this. And in claiming back your sovereignty, you suddenly realise that the power in this nation, the power of it on this island, is with the people. And it's always been with us. It's just that we've been fooled and deceived and conned into believing we have no power.
Absolutely. Now, let's take a step back here for a second, if we may, on the whole issue of the law. We live in what we believe to be a society full of people. We just accept that we're part of that society. Now, tell my listeners out there exactly what this society is that they belong to.
Well, the thing is, the society, one of the things I'd ask you listeners, the same as I ask any audience or any group of people I stand up in front of, can you name that society? Can you actually give me the name of the society you belong to? Because all societies have a name. There isn't a society in the world that hasn't got a name. They've all got a name. So I'd ask them to question, you know, what is the name of the society? And are they really a member of it? Because just because you're told you're a member of this society, does that mean you actually are? And this is the key point to this, because the society that actually everyone believes they're a member of, the actual name of this society is called the Law Society. And the Law Society is the same as everything else that's out there. It's a corporate body, it's a company, a corporation in its own right. So you're actually the member of a corporation, but it's not you that's a member of it, and that's the key. That is the whole key, because when I started to look at everything and I started to look at things in detail and started to understand this, I understood that they have a law system called statute laws, but it's not actually law. It's policy, it's legislation, and it's legislation that's brought down on top of us every single day, and we are meant to adhere to this stuff, and we're told it's law. But when you actually look at the construct of the words used within it, you suddenly realise you're basically in what's called contract law, and it's a contract legislation. And because of this contract legislation, you cannot be forced to do anything. So the only way they can force you to do something, or they can to get you to do something, is to deceive you into saying yes. Because as a sovereign, there is no authority above you. And any authority that is there is only there if you grant it authority. So what they've done is they devised a system where they gave everyone a legal person, a legal personality. Now, this is a piece of paper you were given when you were born. It normally it's always got a name on it that you didn't choose. You couldn't express a choice. You weren't, you know, you didn't even have a clue what was going on. So you had this piece of paper attached to you. But this piece of paper is really all that's a member of this society. Because it's a legal world. And a legal world exists only on pieces of paper. So the piece of paper attached to you is a member. And everyone out there who is of substance or a man or a woman is actually classed as a thing. And you're a thing until such time as you have a piece of paper to give you the legal person, the legal personality. And it's the same, exactly the same construct when you actually look at the way a company's formulated. Mm. A company's formulated, when it's formulated, when it's actually incorporated, it becomes a person in its own right, a legal person, because it has legal personality. And the law, the policy we live in, is one personality operating against another personality via a contract. But for a contract to exist, there has to be mutual consent from all persons engaging in that contract. There has to be. And a contract basically creates or modifies an existing relationship.
Now, this is interesting, because I know from the talk during the week and off the grid that all of us tend to enter into these contracts without realising we even have. And you gave some examples, like a parking ticket and the principles that are behind sending you a parking ticket and what you do to react to that parking ticket. And you also you came up with an example with regards to the TV licence. Just talk the listeners through that and explain how they enter into Joinder by replying to these things.
Well, Joinder's really, really important, because they can only ever operate against this piece of paper, they've got to fool you into to representing this piece of paper. And this is creating. What they have to do is establish what legal person they're actually operating against. So they do this by what's called Joinder. Now, they've got the pretense on. The pretense is data protection. So when they ring you, they will ask you for your name, they ask you for your first line of your address, your postcode, and then your date of birth. In reality, what they're actually establishing is, who is the legal person? What's the name of the legal person on the piece of paper? Where does that piece of paper reside? And what date was it created? Because this is what the birth certificate basically holds. Now, we've always believed that's just a record of our birth, but what it basically is the creation of the legal person. So they need to establish this before they can actually operate on you. So this is why, under this pretense of data protection, they always ask you the same question. Now, once they've established Joinder, they can then offer that legal person a contract. And it's either under an Act of Parliament, it's basically under an Act of Parliament, and they use what's called a statutory instrument against you. Now, statutory instruments are very interesting. Two very interesting words, because statutory is basically created, and instrument is written legal contract. So it's a created written legal contract. But we all believe that statutory instruments, if you do know what they are law. And the laws are enforceable upon us because we are a member of this society. But it's not. It's a contract that's being offered to you. But in being offered to you, because you're a sovereign, they have to get you to consent. They have to ask you. I have to get you to say, yes, I give authority to you. I give you authority over me. Now, to do that, they use a little language called legalese. This is the language of the Law Society. And one of the tricks in there is to use the word understand, because if you actually look at Black's Law and you study the law books, you'll find that there's a lot of words that are synonymous with other words. And understand is actually synonymous with stand under. So when they're saying to you, do you understand? What they're actually saying to you is, do you stand under me? Do you give me authority over you? If you agree, then you've agreed to have authority over you. If you sign a fixed penalty notice, a speeding fine, you sign a statement from the police that says, I understand, you're actually agreeing and saying, yes, I agree that this statement could be made and you can make this statement, or this fixed penalty fine, I've agreed, I understand. But what you're actually saying is, I stand under this, I give it authority over me.
Mm. Now, when you go to court, and this I found particularly interesting, you've actually tested this, you've put this to the test, and other people as well now, there's a lot of people following you with tpuc.org that have put this to the test, where you've gone into a magistrate's court, they ask you to go into the dock, they ask the solicitor or the barrister to go to the bar, it all relates to Admiralty law. Now, you have a legal right not to go in the dock, not to stand up when told, and to actually question the magistrate. Just talk us through that process, John.
Right, well, the first thing is that the first thing I'll say to you is, it's not a legal right, it's a lawful right. There's a massive difference between legal and lawful, and never the twain shall meet, ever. there is a massive difference. Lawful is about us as being of substance, and legal is only about pieces of paper. There's no mistake, it's called a dock in a court, because a dock is where a vessel would be moored, but a vessel would go into a dock, and you're basically, as a man or a woman, a vessel for that piece of paper. So they will dock you, and you will then become what's called a representative of that piece of paper. Because that piece of paper can't walk, it can't talk, and it can't pick up a pen, and in all senses of the word, it's just stationary. So it can never do anything, it's stationary. So what they do is they trick you into representing this. Now if you take a solicitor or you take a barrister into a court, you're actually classed then as ward of court, because you are classed as an imbecile, because you do not know the language that's going to be used against you, because you don't understand legalese. So this is very, very significant. If you look at a bar and the way a bar structure, what they're talking about in the definition of a bar, you're looking at the piece of land where water meets the land. This is why a solicitor's called to the bar, because he'll be called from the water side up to the land. He will walk it. And this is two different jurisdictions, completely different jurisdictions. And it's the jurisdiction. And what they're going to do when you go into a court is try and get you into a dock, because they need you as a vessel to represent the legal person, because as I said, the legal person is nothing more than a piece of paper. When you refuse to get in the dock, you're refusing to represent. You're actually refusing. You're saying, no, I'm not representing this piece of paper. I am not the name that's on this piece of paper. And I am not that piece of paper. So you cannot act against me, because you only can act against this piece of paper, because the court is a corporate place of business. There has been no law courts in this land for over 409 years. There is no law courts whatsoever, and there certainly isn't no justice.
Now, there's an interesting point on this as well that you brought up at the meeting, and that was with regards to the magistrate actually swearing an oath. Because when you walk into a court, most people think they're walking into a public building. They're actually walking into a private building, and the summons in legalese is actually an invitation.
Absolutely.
And that's an important thing to remember. So when you go in there, you can actually question the magistrate. Let's, again, talk us through that, John.
Well, basically, what you're doing is, if you walk into a court, and what we do is we sit where we please. Now, they don't like this, because they want to get you in a dock. But we just sit where we please. And no matter how many times we're asked, we just sit where we want to sit. And then what we do is, they'll ask you your full name. First thing, because you're the accused. Whenever you go into a court, you're the accused. So they will ask for the accused. They will ask, and they will get asked for your full name, and they'll try and get you to confirm your name. So they will say, are you, in my case, John James Harris? Now, I would say, in return, who am I addressing? Because I need to know who I'm addressing. So they will say, the magistrate, and say, okay, or a justice of the peace, and say, okay, that's fine. If you're a justice of the peace or in the magistrate, can you produce your oath of office, please? Now, they don't like this, and they get very, very annoyed, because they suddenly realise what we do. But they do get, it's quite interesting what goes on from this point, because they cannot produce their oath. But they will say, yes, we took an oath. They say, well, can you produce that oath right now? Well, if they say, no, we can't, when, unfortunately, as far as I'm concerned, you're an imposter until such time as you can provide evidence you're a magistrate. And if you don't stand down, then unfortunately we're going to have to call the police to arrest you for imposter, you know, for being an imposter. Mm. Because, see, no one can have authority in this country unless they have an oath of office. What we're seeing happening on the streets with PSCOs and all the other aspects of corporate police, we're seeing people on the streets, and the traffic officers, the civil enforcement officers, the council tax enforcement, TV licence enforcement officers. What we're seeing is people pretending to have authority under a corporate banner to get you used to people having authority who can't hold an oath. They have no oath of office. And it's not supposed they can't have one, but a mort main can never hold an oath. Because it's dead, and a corporation is dead. These people work for an entity that's dead.
So you cannot hold
an oath.
I've got to stop you there, John, because we've got to go into another ad break. So just hold that thought, because we're going to come back on that in just a moment. No, ad breaks can be a pain at times, but they have to pay the bills, as they say.
Absolutely, I totally understand.
Right, we're going to come back with John in just a moment, but let me tell you, this is so important what John's saying now, because it affects every single one of you listening, and certainly if they produce that oath of office, and the oath of office says they're swearing an allegiance to common law and the Queen, then effectively by using statute law, they could be committing treason in their own courts. It gets more interesting. Stick with us, you're listening to Now That's Weird. This is me, Ross Hemsworth, back after this.
Hi, this is your own pal, Ozzy Osbourne. I love listening to Ross Hemsworth and his guests on Now That's Weird. They make me feel f***ing normal.
Are you truly happy? Do you feel that there's more to life, but don't know where to find it? More to Life magazine is the spiritual magazine to enlighten you with simple, easy-to-read articles on everything from angels, stress management and healing, through to Reiki, yoga and meditation. For just £13.50 for a year's subscription, we have the tools to help you discover what you really want from life. Visit moretolifemag.co.uk to find out more about us. Exploration is the path to a better life.
The Crystal Sound Bowl Experience. Relax in private surroundings close to Glastonbury Town Centre and benefit from the powerful energies created by Crystal Sound Bowls. Experience deep relaxation, boost the immune system and release tension at a very deep level. The soothing yet stimulating sounds resonate with the chakras, helping the body to be in its natural state, peaceful and at ease. For discussions, consultations and appointments, please telephone Steve Dash on 07768 252323 or email steve-at-hotmail.co.uk. The Crystal Sound Bowl Experience.
The Connections Magazine, the leading independent free guides to personal development, natural therapies and all things mystic. The three regional magazines cover the Southwest, London and Southeast and the Midlands, with articles and columns by Dr. Alan Sweeney, Barbara Brennan, Dr. Keith Hearn, Joseph Sarah, Karen Kay, Gail Force and many more. Why not advertise from only £230 a year? Your events, therapies, centres, courses and workshops, retreats, readings, products for sale, organic and vegetarian shops. With us to our thousands of like-minded readers. See theconnections.co.uk or phone 01747 823 424. Hurry, time is ticking. Whether it's for fitness, for fun, or for the family, Avalon Leisure Centres have something for everyone. Visit us now at Froome Leisure Centre, Wells Leisure Centre, and Strode Swimming Pool and Fitness Centre in Street. Visit our website for details at avalonleisure.co.uk or call now for great savings on our lifestyle membership scheme on 01458 444915. Quoting GlastonburyRadio.net. That's 01458 444915. In 1971, US President Nixon declared a war on cancer. 30-plus years later, it continues, taking the lives of loved ones and consuming billions in currency all over the world. Why is that, one must ask? A prudent question, as 15-plus cultures around the planet remain free of this and other diseases that are rife in the modern world. What are the factors in their lives that enable this to be? Well, actually, the answers have been known for a very, very long time. For further information, visit apricotshop.co.uk, whose mission is researching, providing information and supplying carefully selected products that potentially provide protection for people's health, along with reducing the risk of contracting lifestyle-related diseases. Put you and your family's well-being first. Prevention is undoubtedly the key to a vibrant existence.
Zoinks, Scoob! I smell something weird!
It's not weird. It's Ross Hemsworth.
You're listening to Now That's Weird with Ross Hemsworth.
Yes, welcome back to Now That's Weird. Coast to coast, right across the world, America, UK, Europe, across to Asia and into Australasia. Everybody's listening tonight and amazed, I think, to hear some of the things that John's talking about. Now, we've got John for 2 hours this evening and I'm really pleased that he's going to do that, because there's so much to talk about. And I must thank you all for the early emails you've been sending in. We haven't ignored them. They are stacking up here and we will be looking at the emails in hour two. But first off, we want to put the case forward so that you can understand what it is John's found and where he's he's working at before we then go into the emails and start to ask the other questions. Now, there's some interesting points coming up, and some of the things we're going to be covering between now and 11 o'clock, including the fact that, did you know that probably none of you listening actually own the car you think you own? That's just one of the things we're going to be talking about in the next 2 hours. And the fact that when the police stop and search or stop to arrest you, you actually don't have to deal with it quite in the way you think you do. And we're going to be addressing an incident that happened to John himself on the M6 motorway. So there's a lot of things we're going to be discussing here. But just before the break, we were talking about in court when the magistrate swears an oath. And the action you take. Now, John had got up to the point where you can ask the magistrate to swear the oath, but what happens when he's actually sworn the oath or threatened you with contempt of court, John?
Well, basically, you see, he doesn't... What you're going to ask him to do is stand on his oath or stand on her oath. And the reason you ask them to stand on it is because if you understand how authority is structured in this country, then you sort of understand where I'm coming from. And it's very, very simple. The Queen is sovereign, but that means she is the keeper of our sovereignty, because we are actually the sovereign. And how it works is that anyone taking any form of authority in this country, i.e. The MPs, the Lords, the judiciary, the police, have to have an oath of office to the sovereign. Now, the reason there is a representative, if you like, which is what they're actually meant to be, with no greater dignity than anybody else they represent, which has kind of gone a little bit wonky over the last 1,000 years. But the reason they swear to one representative is because they can't do it to us all, because there's too bloody many of us. So they do it, so there's a line in the sand drawn, and that's the line that can never be crossed. Obviously, that line has been crossed. Because of this, that oath is actually only issued to a magistrate or judge, because it comes from us. So that's the only reason they have the oath in the first place, is because we've allowed for that to happen, because we allow for these people to have authority over us. Now, in a normal law court, that would be totally acceptable, as long as there is a jury to make the ultimate decision. Because, again, the ultimate decision of any case has to come from the people, and that's why juries were used. And a jury is the most powerful element in any court, because it holds what's called nullification. It holds discretion. Now, if a jury feels that the law is being unjust in them circumstances, even though they feel that the man or woman on trial is possibly guilty, but because there's extenuating circumstances, a jury could actually nullify the case by going against the law, by saying it was unjust in them circumstances. Now, this is the power of discretion. This is the and it's exactly the same as what a judge should hold, exactly the same as what the police should hold. They should hold the power of discretion. What people don't know as well is that the armed forces hold the power of discretion, because a soldier does not have to do everything he is told or she is told if they believe it to be unjust and unlawful. They can actually question an order. This again, this is why this element is so powerful, because it's the people that hold the final say. And that's the only way that a sovereign nation can actually exist. And as far as, you know, we're told we live in a sovereign nation, I know from the history studies that that sovereign nation was smashed to pieces over 400 years ago. But that's a story for another time, if you like.
Now, it's interesting that earlier on in the conversation you said that one of the reasons that this doesn't stand up on statute law is because we're dealing with companies and corporations. Now, I know you've done a lot of work on this, and you've uncovered some amazing facts of exactly who is trading as a company, haven't you?
Yeah, it's everybody. The police are corporate, the courts are corporate, the MPs are directors of a company, you know, the Ministry of Justice is the ultimate parent company of, which is the parent company of all the magistrates' courts in the land as businesses. You know, as you quite you clearly pointed out, every court in the land is a private place of business. You need an invite to go there. It is not a public building. You know, there's so much to this people don't realise, and it's simply because the devolution of power has been going on since about 1215. They try to devolve the power away from the sovereign, because in devolving the power away from the sovereign and giving it to the third sector, which is what we're now seeing, basically we're giving it to private companies, they're taking the power away from the people. It's not about taking it away from the sovereign, it's about taking it away from the people. But the sovereign is very, very frightening for these people, because that, you know, the Queen at this moment in time holds two very, very powerful elements within common law, royal proclamation and the power of dissolution. And we, you know, it's perceived by the people as a rule that the Queen is powerless. And as a constitutional sovereign, she only actually has the right to warn, the right to be informed, and the right to guide. But her common law powers are exceptional. She can wipe out anything at a stroke of a pen whenever she wanted to. But to do that, she has to have the will of the people. Because it's us who are doing it, and the Queen is doing it on our behalf.
Mm.
And this is where the oath is so critical, because if you go into a court and you get them to stand on their oath, if they produce their oath, you can pull out that affidavit and you can say, well, I'm sorry, I removed my sovereignty, I took back my power, so your oath has no power anymore.
Mm.
I've removed it. And this is, we're actually seeing this happen. We've got, you know, there was a case today, I haven't heard what's gone on because I've not been informed of it yet, but there was a case again today. And what we did do as well, we actually went up to Scotland because one of our members, who's fantastic at this stuff, and he really is good at what he does, went up to Scotland to deal with a case with the CSA, and we were told that the laws were different, and I understand the laws were different in Scotland, and I always said they're not, it's exactly the same. So he went up to Scotland, did exactly the same, and dismissed the magistrate.
Mm. Fantastic. Now, on the sovereign point, this is something that's very interesting, because the last couple of years, we've seen a growing media interest in persuading people that the monarch is outdated, that we don't need the monarch anymore, and that we should actually get rid of the Queen. Now, do you think that there's an agenda behind that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly it. See, the point is, if this country, this island, whatever you want to call it, if the sovereign's actually got rid of, then we are completely stuffed. That's a corporate takeover. And it's not about who's there, and it's not about the way that it's structured. It's actually been structured completely wrong. It's the position.
Mm.
Now, a true sovereign, a true keeper of the people of this island's sovereignty, it should be someone who sits with no greater... This goes back to the tribal way of doing things. It goes all the way back to 450, in fact. And the representative of the people... Would normally be in a tribe would be a chieftain.
Mm.
And that chieftain would hold no greater dignity than anybody else within the tribe, would have no better lifestyle, would eat the same food, and would work alongside the people as the people. And if there was to be slight difference, then it would be done at the people's wishes. So basically the chieftain would say, I now place myself in your hands. And on how well I do my job is what lifestyle you see is fitting for me. Not what I choose, what you choose. Mm. Because that is a true representative, because they're meant to be an example. No queen, no government, no king has a right to rule us. They are simply there to represent us as our servants.
Mm, absolutely right. Now, I want to just go back to this M6 thing, if I may, because I mentioned earlier about your episode on the toll road on the M6, which I found highly amusing when you discussed it. And the point here to make to the listeners is that underneath all the uniform and all the actor, if you like, in his big fluorescent jacket, is actually a human heart. Now, tell us exactly what happened in that incident and why you got pulled in the first place.
Well, I used to drive quite a fast car, and I was on my way up to Edinburgh to do a talk, and I got onto the M6 toll road, and I know something about the M6 toll road. It's actually a private piece of land, so actually I don't know if you know this, but if you've got a car and you wanted to drive your car on your land or a tractor on your land, and you were completely out of your mind on drink, there was nothing anybody could do to stop you. I wouldn't recommend it because it's a very stupid thing to do. But you can do it, and a friend of mine actually did write his car off. He had a Porsche and he ripped it off on his own land, and the police come and there was nothing they could do. No one was hurt, he wasn't hurt, but it's your land, and their laws and their legislations do not apply to private land. So I pulled up to the toll road and I paid my £4.50 or whatever it was, and as far as I'm concerned, I paid to go on a racetrack. Because basically the M6 toll road is a racetrack, and anyone who's got any car that can do a reasonable amount of speed, they literally race it along it. And there's hardly any traffic on there because no bugger wants to pay the toll fee in the first place. So I was with my mates, and we got this ST up to about 160 mile an hour. And as I come slowed down to about 122, there was a camera on the bridge and it flashed me. And then, funny enough, the BBC were there as well. But I've never been put on the BBC, which I find quite extraordinary considering the speed I was doing. Lo and behold, a few minutes later, blues and two straight up the arse. Come into the toll road and to the toll booth, and the lady got really aerated because she was trying to get me out of the way. Because she said, "Can't you see the car?" I said, "No, it's for me, don't worry about it." So anyway, I went for the toll booth and I pulled up, and he opened the side passenger door. He said, "You're banned." I went, "Oh, okay then, thank you very much." And I didn't say anything, but okay, so you're judge, executioner, and everything all in one. He asked me to give him his keys, give him my keys. I could understand that he was worried I was going to drive off, but I was quite happy to comply. Because I do know that what you resist persists. So sometimes it's better not to resist. Especially when you know how to talk to these people. So I climbed in the passenger side of the car and sat talking to him, and he started reeling out all the bits and pieces, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I just started talking to him, and very calmly and very collectively, and just said, you know, okay, could you please explain what crime I've actually just committed? And he said, well, you haven't, really. And I said, well, that's interesting. So there's no harm, there's no loss, there's no injury, so there isn't actually a crime. The car was quite capable to do that speed. No one else was on the road at that time. So what have I actually done wrong? Oh, well, you've broken speed and blah, blah, blah. Okay, I said, that's fine. I know you're a corporate officer and you have to do your paperwork, so we'll just get on with the paperwork. I said, but I do advise you right at this minute, I never take any paperwork from you and I will never sign anything. So I need to let you know that. And he said, this conversation went on for about 20 minutes, and he'd become happier. The longer we were speaking, the happier he'd become. And he said to me, can I have your name? I said, yep, the person's name. And every time I answered every question, the person, he smiled. So I'm pretty sure he knew what I was doing, but I was actually only giving him the information of the legal personality, which was absolutely nothing to do with me. And then we got to the stage, I said, well, you're going to offer me a contract in a minute. And he said, well, no, actually, you were going too fast. This will go straight to the magistrate's court, and they will send you out a notice of implied prosecution. I said, thank you, that's the contract. And he started to laugh, because what he realised when he said it, a notice is synonymous with offer in Black's law. So actually, when you change the word, an offer of implied prosecution, they were offering me this. They weren't enforcing it, because they can't, because it's a contract. Conversation carried on for a little bit later, and we were laughing and chatting, and I gave him the URL of the website, and I shook his hand, and I wished him a good day. I said it was a pleasure to meet him, and he said likewise. I got in the car. I actually left my keys with him. I had to go back, and I knocked on the window, said, have my keys, and he smiled, gave me the keys. I said, thanks very much, and off I went. That was, I don't know, 5 or 6 months ago. I've never received anything.
Amazing. We've got to take another break here because we're going into the hour break, so you've got a chance to have a fag here, John.
Oh, nice.
We'll be back with you in just a moment, so don't go anywhere. I'll be chatting to you offline in just a moment. Now, just before we go into the break, I've got to tell you that many of you out there think you own your car, and John will explain this better than me in part two. But just to give you a synopsis and something to think about as we go into hour two, have you ever wondered why when you sign a V5 registration document, you get a piece of paperback that tells you you're just the registered keeper and not the owner? There's a lot more to come, believe me. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back right after the break.
the show
the world listens to on a Friday night.
This is Now That's Weird with Ross Hemsworth.
Zoinks, Scoob! I smell something weird!
It's not weird. It's Ross Hemsworth.
You're listening to Now That's Weird with Ross Hemsworth.
Email the show, Ross, at nowthatsweird.co.uk.
For nearly 20 years, Nexus has been the world's leading alternative news magazine. Read a selection of articles at nexusmagazine.com. Published every 2 months, Nexus is your best source of hard-to-get information behind the news, health, UFOs, future science. If you don't believe everything your government and their experts tell you is true, where do you look instead? Phone Nexus Magazine today on 01342 322 854 or see nexusmagazine.com. Available at all good news agents. Visit the show's official website, nowthatsweird.co.uk, and meet the team behind the show. Are you truly happy? Do you feel that there's more to life but don't know where to find it? More to Life magazine is the spiritual magazine to enlighten you with simple, easy-to-read articles on everything from angels, stress management and healing, through to Reiki, yoga and meditation. For just £13.50 for a year's subscription, we have the tools to help you discover what you really want from life. Visit moretolifemag.co.uk to find out more about us. Exploration is the path to a better life.
Hi, this is your own pal, Ozzy Osbourne. I love listening to Ross Hemsworth and his guests on Now That's Weird. They make me feel f***ing normal.
Thank you.
there is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space itself and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area that we call... Now that's weird.
Yes, welcome back to Now That's Weird with me, Ross Hemsworth, and my guest in the first 2 hours, John Harris. Still to come on the programme tonight, Major Ed Dames joining me in Hour 3, live from America. He's the man probably most famous for remote viewing and the belief that a major solar flare is going to take us all out in or around 2012. They call him the Master of Gloom on Coast to Coast with George Noory. I believe that's the right title anyway, but we're looking forward to having a chat with Ed, find out his take on 2012 and how you can remote view. But in this section of the programme, Hour 2, we're going to continue on the same theme as Hour 1 with John Harris. Now, before the break, John was telling us about an incident on the M6 toll road, and we're going to be talking a little bit more about driving and about your cars, and also about how you don't ever need to pay the TV licence again, and John will tell you why in just a little while. We're also going to be looking at your emails in this hour, so stand by for those. But what I want to go into next, John, if I may, is the whole fact of corporate ownership, because when I heard you talk the first time, you mentioned about a company called Southwest One that owned Devon and Cornwall Police, and when you actually dug into this, you found that in fact that was a company owned by IBM. Well, we've since found out from our dig in this end that Somerset County Council is also owned by Southwest One and thus IBM. Now, it's an interesting point because I know you do most of your studies on the Dun and Bradstreet website, which is I suppose it's a credit referencing thing, but it's a much, much bigger company than that. Dun & Bradstreet is like the industry bible for anyone corporate. And you found out some interesting information in there, not just about Devon and Cornwall Police, but a very interesting story I know about Lancashire County Council. Just tell us about this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite funny. One of our researchers was looking into council tax, and what I will say as well, if I may at this moment, is that we have just got one of our members who actually now has received a letter from the council tax people saying he doesn't have to pay anymore.
Fantastic.
It's not something we're bringing out widely. We want to try it again first before, because obviously we're very much guinea pigs before we actually give anybody anything. But he has received a letter, which is very interesting, and there is some training courses now being structured to actually teach people how to do this. The Lancashire County Council is quite incredible. Mike was looking into council tax and has been for some months, and he stumbled across some information and he found that Lancashire County Council, which is a complete county council, not like a little town council, was actually incorporated, and not only was it incorporated, it was actually dissolved on the 21st, 2008. I haven't got my information in front of me, but I believe that to be correct. All assets and liabilities were actually transferred to another organisation called the Blues and Twos Credit Union, which actually was registered at Lancashire Constabulary headquarters. So Mike was a bit puzzled by all of this, because he said, well, I'm paying council tax to this company that supposedly... to this county council, which is not only was it a corporation, it's actually been dissolved as a corporation, and now it's gone to another corporation. So he rang up the FSA down in Canary Wharf, the Financial Services Authority, and got to talk to a lovely girl down there who basically was very happy to depart information and said simply he shouldn't be paying this company anymore because it doesn't exist. So Mike said, well, if that's the case, then surely then I would be, if I have been paying from the date it was unincorporated, or it was dissolved, then surely I'm entitled to a refund. And she was quite happy to say, well, yeah, you are entitled to a refund, because this company does not exist. I started to look at this, because I kind of check everything out I'm ever told, and I just found what you just said to me a minute ago very fascinating, actually, and it's wonderful that people are actually starting to look at this stuff themselves. So I started to look at this, and I went on to Company's House, and lo and behold, I found Lancashire County Council under the IP number, which happens to be 666, which we found quite funny. Company removed, and then underneath, company dissolved on the 25th of the 1st, 2008. But the funny thing is, just after this, the government changed legislation that actually, I was talking to an accountant down in Lewis about this, because he came to one of my talks, because I couldn't explain why we couldn't find this information anymore, because it's actually disappeared off of company's house. When I was talking to this accountant, he said, well, we're up in arms about this, he said, because a little while ago they changed legislation to allow them to take away company information off a company's house. Now, this is highly irregular, and these accountants are up in arms about it because they're saying, well, this is not possible. You should not be allowed to do this. All company records should exist for a certain period of time. So I looked in a bit further to this because you can't find this information anymore. We've got copies of it, fortunately. I looked at the Bluesenhoos Credit Union, I looked up Nun and Bradstreet, and I actually found it was registered at Lancashire Constabulary. Not only that, it was registered at the federal office. Now, that spark sank in me, which made me go back into looking into history again, because you only have anything that's federal when you're a republic, same as America. So, if they're claiming they are a federal office, Why would they be doing that within a sovereign nation? Or have we been a republic for a lot longer than we could possibly imagine? And this all stems back again to around about the time of sort of 1649, around about 1651, 1653, 1655, when the country, after Cromwell, whose real name was William, entered into Parliament backed by the bankers, actually took Parliament over and created a republic for 11 years until his son, supposedly, Richard, actually, lost control again to another Charles. But the point is, I now don't believe that we ever left being a republic, and this is why they needed to create the Bill of Rights 1689 to create a constitutional sovereign, to fool us into believing that the sovereigns had no power whatsoever. So it's very, very interesting, all this information and how it leads on. What I find even more interesting about what you've just said is the fact that you've now just found your council linked into IBM.
It's strange and somewhat worrying, actually, the fact that Southwest One is a trading company of IBM itself, and as to how IBM can be in charge of our councils now, police force, for God's sake.
It's quite interesting, Russ, because we've just found out some information which was openly published in across the media, in the Telegraph, actually. The heading of the article is, "This company runs Britain." And it actually turns out that there's a company called Serco that actually is not only in control of most of the infrastructure within the United Kingdom Corporation, and I will call it a corporation because it is, but not only is it in control of the infrastructure, it's also in control of our nuclear weapons. This is a private company.
That's worrying.
Now, I've just recently found out this information, and I'm now headlogging, going to be doing a bit of research in Serco to find out who Serco are. I've got a friend who's another member of TPUC, he's been a long member of TPUC, who's an ex-councillor. He's delving into this deep. I'm going to collect the information off of you, what you've just said today, when I meet you next week, because I find that fascinating, because not only we're now seeing police forces getting taken over by IBM, we're also now seeing councils. Now, that is incredibly interesting to me, because this is snaking up the country at an alarming rate, and it looks like this Southwest One IBM. See, I found that two directors of IBM are two directors of Southwest One. And IBM is the ultimate parent company of Southwest One as a part of a group of companies. Now, I can't give you the list because it's not in front of me, but we're talking about 300 companies.
It is quite frightening. Now, on the limited company point, John, I want to sort of go back to the whole thing of government, because we know government now is actually a limited company. We know the Ministry of Justice is a limited company. But you went one stage further and you found the Labour Party was actually trading as Alistair Darling Limited.
Oh, this is hilarious, yeah.
Have you done the same searches on the other parties, like the Conservatives and the Lib Dems?
Yeah, this is so funny. Well, just to correct you, the government and that, they're not actually what they call limited companies. Are actually what are called UCs. They're unincorporated. Now, UCs are very, very clever companies, because UCs never have to publish their accounts, and they're exempt. They are actually exempt by their own law from publishing their own accounts, and they are actually above their own laws. to use these. And if you actually took the British, if you take the British National Party and actually look at them, you'll find they're a UC company. So that kind of says to me who actually set up the British National Party. Another thing you might find interesting, or your listeners might find interesting, if you look at the political party called the UKIP, UK Independence Party, you'll find that they are trading as the members of the European Parliament.
Oh, that's worrying in itself, isn't it?
It's so funny. When you start actually looking at this stuff, it's really, really funny. But yeah, Alistair Darling he's quite an amazing, actually. I looked at a lot of the MPs and I looked at the sort of Conservatives and that, and I found a lot of information about who's set up as a company and who isn't. But what struck a bell with me was Alistair Darling, who happens to be a diplomat. Now, being a diplomat, you can hide a lot of things. There's a lot of things that diplomats can do that people don't realise. Diplomatic status is a very powerful status to have. When I started to look, I found that Alistair Darling was a trading name of the Labour Party. So I started to look at Alistair Darling, and we started to look at a company called Consignia Customer Management Limited, which is a company that actually hasn't been trading for about 7 years. It's actually in dormant status. Now, if you start a company tomorrow and it never trades, the company would always stay in dormant status. It only comes out of dormant any time that you start to trade. So we started to look at Consignia because Consignia had sparked off a lot of interest with people many years ago concerning the post office. And that never really went away because part of the Consignia holdings is 10 Royal Mail companies, which includes their pensions and their actual holdings, which is the buildings. And as you know, the Royal Mail has a colossal amount of real estate.
Mm.
So we started to look at this and we found that the Consignia was part of a group of companies that, who had an ultimate parent company, and that was the Secretary of State for Trade and Industry. Well, that kind of really did spark some interest with me because it was like, hold on a minute, this is a government department, supposedly, that's paid for by taxpayers' money. He's the head of a group of companies that includes 35 companies, including two that don't even exist in this country, one in the Netherlands and one in Bermuda. But then I suddenly realised, hold on a minute, who was the Secretary of State of Trade and Industry? Mr. Darling. Well, we looked a bit deeper, and then, lo and behold, like I said, stuff just seems to come to me, and a gentleman sent me some information. It was about his gyro account, and he had a gyro account, a bank account with the post office, and he just received a letter off the 18 Customs Revenue. I've got a copy of the letter, when you've seen it in the slideshow, that says his bank account now is owned by JP Morgan Europe Limited. Hold on a minute, this is really getting unusual. What's going on here? I'm seeing all these changes. And I dug a little bit deeper and I found that Consignia Customer Management are trading as TV licensing. Now, TV licensing takes $3.6 billion a year off of the taxpayers. So I thought, right, hold on a minute, there's something really strange here. So let's backtrack here a minute. We've got a company that doesn't actually exist, it's dormant, collecting $3.6 million as part of a group of companies headed up by the ultimate parent company, which is the Secretary of State for Trade and Industry, a government department that happens to be a trading name of the Labour Party.
It gets worse. Hold on there, John, because we've got to take another break, but hold that thought, because I'm going to come back on this, especially with the TV licensing issue, right after these words.
Ross at nowthatsweird.co.uk.
The proposition is straightforward. We install digital posters at any location on your premises and then stream any information you require remotely to your high-definition screens. The concept is called digital signage. And In Your Face Media is the leading business providing this technology. In Your Face Media is a young, enthusiastic company with the expertise and infrastructure to get your message across. We offer fast, interactive, animated and video marketing communication on high-definition screens in conjunction with remote media and their award-winning Signage Live software. We've installed a large number of HD digital screens in a wide variety of environments. If you're as excited with digital signage as we are, then please call us. We'd be more than happy to arrange a meeting and discuss your needs and our solutions in greater detail on 0117 942 0670 or visit our website at inyourfacemedia.co.uk.
The Hex family has been making traditional farmhouse cider in Somerset for six generations, since 1840. Using apples grown in our orchards upon Glastonbury Tour, our ciders and perry are still made the traditional way, using wooden barrels and sold straight from the wood. Try our port wine of Glastonbury, now on draft at the George and Pilgrims Hotel in Glastonbury. Or better still, visit our cider farm at 9 to 11 Middle Lee in Street, just 2 miles from Glastonbury Town Centre, and taste our award-winning cider. Perry and apple juice, as well as traditional blends. We have many single varieties like Kingston Black, cider vinegar, local cheddar cheese, jams, pickles, chutneys, marmalade, honey, Somerset Royal Cider Brandy, and a range of cider jars and mugs, all produced locally from farms around the Somerset Levels. So come and visit us today for a real taste of Somerset. Visit hexfarmhousecider.co.uk or call us on 01458 442 367. We welcome group tours, but don't come all at once, will you? Don't forget, that's hexfarmhousecider.co.uk.
Visit the show's official website, nowthatsweird.co.uk, and meet the team behind the show.
Yes, welcome back to Now That's Weird with me, Ross Hemsworth, my guest, John Harris. The website, if you want to find out more about this, is www.tpuc.org. Now, I've got to tell you, some fantastic forums and people exchanging advice on there as well. Just sign up to be a member of the site, totally free, and you'll get a whole lot more information from other members. Now, I'm getting a lot of emails in for John, and we will try and get through as many of these as we can in just a little while. But before we do, I want to talk about TV licensing, because we were talking about consignia and various things before the break there, John. And you've done this, you know it can work, you've done it, so have a lot of other people. Tell my listeners how they should never have to pay a TV licence again.
Well, it's really strange. When we kind of got into this, we received a lot of information about the BBC. And funny enough, I'm talking to someone from the BBC. I've been recently talking to someone who's actually on the inside, who's kind of some fascinating stuff being said. What we found out is that they'd actually broke their charter, and in doing so, breaking the charter, that means that the actual charge was invalid. This was the original way that we headed this sort of up, and there was a bias. They were biased towards the government. They were biased towards the EU, and they were actually receiving EU money, which again is against the charter. So we structured something based on them facts. Excuse me. When we started to look at it deeper, we suddenly realised that BBC and TV licences is all about contracting again, and you don't have to accept it. And you really don't have to accept this contract. So a friend of mine up in Milton Keynes sent me some information and the Maxim, which was really, really interesting. And he showed me the documentation, he showed me the wording on the back of it. And then what we did is we worked together on it, and we suddenly realised that not only was there this Maxim come into play, there was also part of two words that were synonymous with each other came into play as well. And on the back of the licensing form, it basically says, we will provide evidence to a court, blah, 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 that you were watching the television. Well, that always kind of puzzled me, because how they could possibly do that in the first place. And then it says after, which will include a statement taken under caution by one of our enforcement officers. Now, which must include, a statement. So I looked at that and thought, hold on a minute, if you legalise this and you know that must is synonymous with may, then that would, you suddenly start to understand that there's a word change here, and the may that was in there, I've not got it in front of me, so I'm trying to do this the best I can from memory. The word that we're changing there would mean it had to include a statement. When you look at the word include, and you look at lawful maxims, you look at the legal one and their maxims, you actually find that the inclusion of one is the exclusion of another, which basically means anything after the word include is all it includes, and nothing else could ever be added. So basically, what we sussed out is that you have to convict yourself. That's the only way it will stand. You literally convict yourself by filling in the statement. When you fill in the statement, you actually are creating what's called a self-perpetuating contract. Because first off, what you'll do is you'll give them joinder, because you'll put your name, you'll put your date of birth, you'll put the address, the postcode, all the aspects of it. You'll tell them what you did wrong, i.e. watching television, and then you will sign it at the bottom to say, I understand, and I give you authority over me to do this. That's a self-perpetuating contract. You're talking off the court, or it's now done through the post, but you would do this, and you suffer what's called summary judgment, because there is no justice to be had. So what actually happens is, they don't have to establish any guilt, you did it yourself. You actually step. Now, if you look at statements with the police, and you look at statements at any fixed penalty fine, it's exactly the same process. They're self-perpetuating contracts, because all they're really offering you is the ability to pay them some money for some reason. That's what they're actually doing. It does sound very complicated, and it's quite hard to explain to make people, you know, see where we're coming from with it, because they need to understand the whole basis of the problem with joined and the words understand and the self-perpetuating contracts.
Absolutely. Now, I'm just going to say to my audience here, and I think this is important, that, again, John always says about lawful rebellion, it's peaceful. Completely peaceful, polite, and what he said at his talk, and again it amused me, was most people get very uptight when they see a TV licensing guy standing at their door, so they start to get very defensive and therefore start to attack. Now, what he does is he actually invites them in, sits them down for a coffee, and watches telly with them while he's discussing it. Because let's face it, if you don't sign that statement, because they're saying, look, I've got you bang to rights, I've even got a video I recorded outside of you watching your television, therefore, this is my statement, this is what I'm going to produce in court. Until you sign that document, fill it in and put your name and address in, you have not entered into joinder or contract, which means, effectively, that TV licensing operative cannot then go to court. Am I right, John?
Absolutely. That's exactly right. They can do as they please, and there is no actual way of ever producing any form of evidence in a court to say you were watching TV. They can't do it. It's impossible. And what they rely on is a simple fact, and this is why everyone's called an officer. And they rely on the word officer because it's an implied assumption in any court that an officer and a gentleman would never lie. And if you call an officer a liar, they will throw the book at you. It goes all the way back to the ships, but it's an implied assumption. And we know these people lie through their teeth.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it is an implied assumption that's held fast by the court. You know, so never ever sign a statement.
No, and it's the same thing with parking fines, isn't it? Because, as you rightly said, when they send you a parking fine, there's always the piece where you fill in your name and address and sign it, and then you put your mitigating circumstances on the next piece of paper. Once you've done that, you've entered into contracts and joinder again.
Not only have you entered into contracts and joinder, you've created self-perpetuating contracts. You've got a contract then that self-perpetuates.
Absolutely.
You know, and if you do get a parking ticket and it's stuck on there and it's got a corporate logo, i.e., whatever council it's come from, then send them a bill for advertising on your car.
That's brilliant. Now, that brings me on to the next bit, John, and I'm going to have to sort of speed things a little bit, because we've only got half an hour left, and I've got a lot of emails to get in. But this one tickled me, because when you did Off the Grid, you mentioned to people, have they ever wondered why, when they buy a car, they get a V5 back saying they're the registered keeper, not the owner? Now, this is a particularly interesting one. Just tell us very quickly about this.
This is a classic, yeah. This is like the one of the core deceptions. Rob Bernard did a lot of stuff on this, because he found out a lot about the word registration. Now, when you apply for a registration document, the word apply actually means to beg. So you're actually begging for something, and you're actually, it's implied assumption, you know, what you're begging for and what you're willing to give up in doing that begging. The word registration actually, during that process, you hand over legal ownership of whatever you're registering to the body you're registering it to. And it's very, very simple to explain. I had an incident. I was helping a doctor, and the doctor was registered with the medical board. They owned his registration, and at any time they deemed fit, they could take his registration away, because he didn't own it. It's owned by them, because he handed it over the day he registered to be an MD. Now, with your car, it's very, very simple. You register your car with a DVLA, and you get a document that comes back that says you're the registered keeper, not the registered owner. Now, anybody can go and check their documentation for their car, and they will see quite clearly printed across the document, registered keeper. Because when you registered the car with the DVLA, you handed over legal ownership of the car. And that's how they can come and clamp you. That's how they can come and take your vehicle away if you don't tax it and crush it, because they legally own it. Because if they didn't do this, to take your car, which is your belonging, and crush it, is theft.
Mm.
It doesn't matter who steals it, it's theft. What we realised was, if they are the owner, and that is the case, the DVLA is a trading name of the Department of Transport, you can find that on Dun & Bradstreet. What we realised was, my car, or my everybody's car is legally owned by a company, so if there is a, you get a parking ticket or a speeding fine that says it applies to the owner, then send it to the owner.
That's brilliant. So next time you get a parking fine or a speeding fine, then send it to the DVLA. Now, I know you've done that, John, haven't you? And several other people have as well.
Yeah,
and never had anything back.
What we actually found is that they actually changed the wording recently, because we now realise that we've caused about 6 changes in legislation, because we're actually backing these people into a corner now. And through other members and the things we do, they now actually put on the tickets and the speeding fines at registered keeper.
This
but
is the trouble.
It doesn't matter, because there's so many ways you can actually defeat these things, and you can have so much. And one of the things I want to say to your audience, Russ, is, which, you know, you've heard me say this before, this is about having fun.
Absolutely. All right, let's go to the emails, John. Now, I'm going to ask you to try and answer these as quickly and as concisely as you can, purely because of the number that we're going to go through here, but I want to try and get through as many as possible. All right, first one. Hi, John. Hi, Ross. Hi, Penny. Were you inspired to follow law more deeply by the Mary Croft book, and what was the spark that made it happen? Was it being treated badly as a carpenter in the building industry? And that's from Mark in Reading.
Firstly, I don't actually read any books other than law. So I've never actually read Mary's book. I understand it is a very good book, and I possibly have got the pleasure of meeting her very soon, because I'll be standing on the same platform down in London, which is going to be really nice to meet her. So no, I didn't actually read the book. What inspired me to do this was basically everybody coming to me with this information and telling me, look at this, this is not right. And it just inspired me to actually, because I've always known all my life that there's something very wrong. I just didn't know what it was.
Okay, hi Ross and John, thanks for all the information you're getting out there. Ross, could you please ask John if he'd be willing to arrange a talk in Wales? Many thanks from Rob, aka Valley's Boy, at TPUC member.
I absolutely adore Wales, and yes, I'd love to come back. I did a couple of talks over there, one in Oxford and one in Haverford West, so yes. Definitely some latter part of the year. I'm quite busy at the moment, but definitely latter part of the year. If you want to send the information through to info@tpuc, one of the admin will pick it up and we'll get something set up. Thank you very much. I'd love to.
Fantastic. There you go. info@tpuc.org. And yes, he will do one in Wales. Ross, Penny, John, good evening. I realise you've probably got a million questions for John, but here's a quickie you might be able to squeeze in later on. Private ownership. It's broken the planet, hasn't it? There's nothing to own on a free planet. No one should really own anything if it's all free and free for all. And that's from Mike Philbin in Oxford.
Absolutely. We were gifted this planet to share, and all we live in are legally defined areas of this planet. That is the borders and boundaries that have been set up. No one can own land. No one can. You can't own land. It was gifted to us all. The trick that they use is the legal world takes land and makes it into what's called incorporeal enhiscement. And when you actually look at it, they make it into property. That's why your house belongs to a property market. Property is incorporeal enhiscement, which basically means it's not visible and it can't be touched. It basically is just simply a piece of paper, and when you pay for your house, what do you get? A piece of paper to say you've paid.
Absolutely right. Okay, this one's got no name on it. It just says, I can't see how the police would act to remove a magistrate from the courtroom. Please explain.
They don't act. No. They just stand down and walk out. And by the way, the courts and the police have what's called a notice of memorandum. It's actually between the police and the Law Society, that no magistrate would actually be arrested in a courtroom, and no police officer will ever be arrested in a courtroom. That's a notice of memorandum between the police and the Law Society.
Okay, hi Ross, Penny and John. I've been following John's work for a little while and read some information on his site recently where someone did not notify DVLC of a change of keeper and they gave up the chase, so to speak, after several letters were sent. Does this mean that the person now has retaken ownership of that vehicle? Best regards, Kenton in Surrey.
No, unfortunately, no. We are in the process. We have one of our members who's been in this process for some time and actually lost his car during the process because he's now entering into the court bill to fight it. It is a very, very tricky thing to do. He's just because, you know, there's this thing about change of keeper and stuff like that, they will just revert back to whatever they can. They do back down on fines. We've had loads and loads of fines back down on, but the system of actually getting your car deregistered is proving to be quite difficult, but we are endeavouring. We're still trying.
Okay, this one comes from one of our American listeners, Shamrock, says, does the guest actually believe that the Queen has the common people's best interest at heart?
Now that's a very interesting question. To be honest, in my heart, I know that she's a good lady, the same as everybody else is good. What resides in people's heads, the ego, is the monster, is not so good. I've got a funny feeling that the Queen is starting to realise that things have gone greatly wrong, and she's been realising this for a long time, but she cannot act until she has the will of the people. What I'm trying to do is give her the will of the people.
Fantastic. Okay, and the last one we're going to take just for the moment says, John, you talk about companies being owned by each other. Who do you think are the MDs of these companies, and who are the people at the top of the chain? Have you any idea? And that's from Paul in a place called Wet Wang. Absolutely. We just checked it. Apparently it does exist. It's in Yorkshire.
I'd love to go up there and do a talk. That'd be fantastic to get that on the site. Wet Wang.
Absolutely.
right, yes. I have an idea. We have an idea, sorry. We do know it's to do with all the directors, and it's linked between the directors. The researchers are still... I'll just say one thing that you might find interesting came to me the other day. A very dear friend of mine who's a lawyer has been looking at the stuff that I've talked about, and we had quite a few discussions about it, and he couldn't accept it because obviously it would, you know, at this moment in time it would have burst his bubble. He went away and did his own research. He's done a lot of research. He's basically drawn up loads of paperwork and loads of evidence, and he actually is now writing a paper, and he absolutely 100% says that what I'm saying is true, and the country now is known as the UK PLC.
That's quite amazing, isn't it? Okay, we're going to take another break. My guest is John Harris. We've got about another 20 minutes with him, so if you've got any more emails, get them in now, and we'll try and get as many more of those done as we can before the break. And I tell you, there's so much more about it. We could do another 2 hours with this guy because there's so much information here. The main thing John says here is remember to keep it peaceful, be polite. That's the most important. And just remember that you hold that own sovereignty. Once you've served these two affidavits on the Queen and retake your own sovereignty, you hold sovereign. And that is so important in this, and you mustn't forget that. But the most important thing is you have to be brave, because as John says at his talks, he can't be there hand-holding everybody that does this. You have to physically be strong enough to go in and do this in these situations. We'll be back right after these words.
Email the show, Ross, at nowthatsweird.co.uk.
Love and Light events present
The Avalon Fairy Ball on Saturday the 3rd of October at the Glastonbury Town Hall, featuring artists Brian Froud, Josephine Wall, Linda Ravenscroft, Peter Prokovnik, Chetney Davis and more. At the Avalon Fairy Ball there'll be music from the Dolmen, fairy fashion shows and much, much more. The Fairy Fair is open between 11 and 5pm and entry is free. The Avalon Fairy Ball starts at 8pm.
Tickets are £20, available from theferryball.co.uk or 01736 330 201.
Festival Times, the UK's number one free music paper. To find out where we're giving away our paper this summer, or keep up to date on band interviews and festival reviews, check out festivaltimes.co.uk for promotions and advertising, or to buy shares in the FT for only £1. Then call the team on 0203 2875123. Festival Times, the new music paper for new music fans.
Want to talk direct to potential customers? Then think digital. Think video. Think local. Think In Your Face Media. In Your Face is a brand new media proposition targeted at affluent Bristol areas. We're currently installing digital wireless posters in wine bars, gyms and cafes, as well as doctors and dentist surgeries. And while they're waiting, they could be reading or watching your advertising messages. The technology is blindingly clever. The screens are operated wirelessly via the internet, so we can program the dynamic content that will appear on every individual screen. Slots start from as little as 2 pence. For more details, call us on 0117 942 0670 or visit our website at inyourfacemedia.co.uk. Visiting Glastonbury and looking for somewhere nice to stay close to the town centre? Then have a listen to what some of our previous guests have said about Barham's B&B. A hidden treasure, real luxury and excellent accommodation. Looked after so well in a really nice friendly atmosphere. Another 2 days at the best ever B&B. A friendly welcome, lovely rooms and a tasty breakfast awaits you at Barham's B&B. Check out our website at barhamsbnb.co.uk and for booking inquiries, simply email gene.hbarham@yahoo.co.uk or call us on 01458 837 875. Rates from just £35 a night. Take a walk back in time by visiting the Gauntlet Shopping Arcade in the High Street, Glastonbury. The Gauntlet is the town's newest shopping area, but set in an ancient walkway that oozes myth, legend, and real history. You'll find a wide range of shops offering a wide variety of products and always a friendly welcome. Visit thegauntlet.biz. The Gauntlet, Glastonbury's premier shopping thoroughfare. Visit the show's official website, nowthatsweird.co.uk, and meet the team behind the show.
Welcome back. Yes, you're listening to Now That's Weird with me, Ross Hemsworth, and my guest, John Harris. And what a guest. What a fantastic time we're having with this evening. And you can have so much fun with this. As John says, this is about fun. This is about challenging beliefs as we know them and actually going out there and saying, well, okay, armed with this information, I can actually make a difference. And we could rock the very foundations of the well, and I use the word society in inverted commas after what John said, but the society we live in. I'm just going to the chat room here, John, and somebody's made the point, and I know the answer to this, but I'm going to let you tell him. Mike says that by having a birth certificate, you have entered into the corporation and you are therefore owner of that name and identity.
Yeah, this is very interesting. Unfortunately, if you look at the bottom of the birth certificate, you'll find that it actually says it's copyrighted. So you're not actually the owner of it. It's something that's attached to you that you do not possess. It's a bit like money. It's just a product. Money's copyrighted as well. So they're basically just products for you to use. There's a lot of talk about this at the moment with people saying that they can claim their bonds back and you can get EIN numbers and different pieces, which we've been through. We've actually looked at this. Unfortunately, that just basically maintains the system as it is, and it will always maintain it. I've got one core value that I hold in my heart, and I will always hold it, and this is what I'm aiming for, that I know and I want the world to be where no one has to pay to live.
Mm.
And that's it. And I am going for the top because I know it's the top that has to change. And in changing the top, then the changes can be made to make this a better world that we live in. Because 98% of people out there would fight to keep this, not get rid of it, because they actually believe in it, they rely on it, and they depend on it. But unfortunately, we've gone a little bit too far with things as a species, and it's now time for change. Mm. And there isn't really a choice. Things are going to change whether people like it or not, because I realised a little while ago, as I talked, as I spoke to you before about Russ, that we as a species only really change when we're presented with no other choice. And at this moment in time, we are really being presented with no other choice. And I've just chosen to change before the fact and not after it, because it's a lot easier.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned earlier about national insurance numbers, and this was something else you said again in the talk, which really shocked me, actually, that when they give you a national insurance number, this isn't just applicable to the UK. In fact, it's not about the UK, is it?
No, it's an American document. Yeah, it is an American document. We were basically sold. That's how. Recently, if you actually, when you look at the birth certificate and you look at the national insurance numbers, there's been a big issue about national insurance, because I've talked about to people, you know, if you've got national insurance, why do you need any other form of insurance? And, you know, they laugh, but, you know, people are suddenly starting to realise what I'm actually getting at. When you take the national insurance number, you can apply to the IRS for what's called an EIN number. You get this EIN number back, and you can, it's actually a number that you could float on the stock exchange. It relates to American documentation. We realised a little while ago that the government had sold bonds, that's basically the birth certificate, which the lad on the gentleman on the forum was talking about. The government has sold bonds. They've actually sold the future bonds for a lot of children who have not been born, possibly for many, many, many years in advance. Mr. Brown, bless his heart, tried to do the same a little while ago and was told to go away by the banking fraternity, the third sector. But the actual national insurance number does not relate to any English documentation whatsoever. It actually relates to American documentation.
Now, a lot of people believe that the power of the world, for, if you like, the New World Order that many talk of, is actually here in the UK and not in America. Now, on one of your talks, you mentioned about an American law that was quite happily progressing through the system and was actually stopped by City of London Limited. Tell us about that.
Well, what happened, it was really quite strange. A lawyer out in Washington rang me up on the... I was actually at work, and he rang me up on my mobile, and he said, I've got some fascinating information. I've been looking at the website, and... We do get a lot of hits from the American law fraternity. And he said they were structuring a fund out in America that they were very, very interested in, because what they realised was it's a lot easier to keep someone in their house, even though they can't pay for it, than to actually move them and to rehouse them. So what they did is they were going to strike this fund up, which would help people maintain their houses, because obviously the climate, the money climate at the time. This is quite powerful, and they went to the city mayors and they went to the council as a whole, and everyone approved it, and it actually got to Parliament Hill. So it got to Capitol Hill, the version of their parliament. It was going through, and it was going all guns ablazes, and it was actually blocked by the City of London. And he was sat there, and he actually heard this being said. And I found that very, very interesting, because I've always known that the power base in the world is that city. And it's something that's quite crucial now to what I've... When I bring the book out very, very soon, I'm going to put a very big explanation about why this city is so powerful and where this city actually resides. State in itself.
That's an interesting point, because you also pointed out in the talk that the City of London is the only other entity other than the Queen that uses a crown logo.
Yes, absolutely, because there is actually two crowns. There is two crowns, and this was again devised in 1689. If you look at the Bill of Rights 1689, you'll see the succession of the crown, and this was not just about the succession of the throne. This was about the succession of the Crown Corporation, and the Crown Corporation as an entity in itself basically has the full control. They basically say that we feed the world. And it's a very interesting statement to make. We feed the world, and they have an incredible amount of power. They completely control the Commonwealth. They have all the power within the Commonwealth, and that's why I'm saying that, you know, the only island that can actually put things right in the world is this island, because all the problems in the world emanate from this island, and that's why they need to destroy this island in particular.
That's frightening. Okay, let's go back to the emails, and I've got one here from Alan in New York City listening this evening. He said, this is really intriguing, but could you tell me, outside of the UK and the Commonwealth, how these changes may affect us over here in America?
Oh, absolutely. Well, the affidavits can be formulated. There is people in America who have formulated affidavits and started to send them off. I don't know how that process actually is done, but I'm sure that, you know, and someone on the forum would actually know. I've not got involved in that, but I do know they're starting it. And one of the things you might find interesting to do is to look at New York City Council and look on Dun & Bradstreet, because you'll find that they're registered as a corporation.
Now, once this is all broken down, the legal system here, when we start talking about other countries following suit, I remember you saying at one of the talks that this is the most important constitution to break down, because once that's done, then the others can almost fall in like a pack of cards.
Yeah, basically, because we have the mother of all systems, and that's why our constitution is not on a stipulated written constitution. It's made up of a lot of documents over the last sort of 700 years. The reason being is because how I see it quite simply is because if you've got something that's unwritten, it's much easier to manipulate. And as I've looked at history for the last sort of 800 years, I've seen an incredible manipulation of this thing this so-called constitution. But what I've always said to people is look at the word constitution, because it tells you exactly what it is in the first three letters, con.
Absolutely. And it's quite interesting when you start to break down some of the words in Latin, like parliament, isn't it?
Yeah, talk lies.
That is actually the Latin. Parli is talk and ment lies.
Parli is French for talk and ment is Latin for lies. And there's been a lot of discrepancies about this, but that was a bit of a joke. But politics is probably the best one because it's many bloodsuckers.
Yeah, it's worrying, isn't it?
I love that one.
Let's go back to Mike in Oxford, who's been very busy on the emails tonight. He said, national insurance numbers and carbon trading, what's the connection?
Do you know what? There's a lot about this carbon trading coming out, and it seems to be... the only way that I could say to Mike that I see that going is that carbon trading is going to be the new money. That's the only way I can see it. There's something about this carbon trading. There's a lot of talk about carbon trading, and I've heard a lot of talk about from the business community about this, but I've got a funny feeling it's going to end up in the new money as the way things are going.
Now, it's interesting on money, because that was the next subject I was actually going to come on to, because you jokingly put up a £20 note in your presentation, which says £20 of what, which is written in. And this is a good point, because on this show over recent weeks, there's been an awful lot of talk about our banking system collapsing, about how... The banking system itself is almost illegal in the way that it works. Probably is illegal, I'd say almost.
Yeah, usually, yeah.
What's your thoughts on this?
Well, I know that there's many, many people have wrote some fascinating articles concerning a world without money, and they've really come up with some fantastic ideas. Excuse me. I kind of looked at money because we started to look at the Bankruptcy Act, and the fact that we're in bankruptcy and there's no debts can be serviced. So if there is no debts to be serviced, then there must be some way, there must be some reason for that. And then we found out about something called non-billing status. Now this is basically what you go through the Masons. When you actually cut the Masons away and you get past all the hocus pocus and all the bloody symbolism and all the other bullshit that they come out with, sorry to swear, but all the other rubbish that they come out with, suddenly find that when you get to the top of the tree, you get something that's called non-billing status. So you don't have to pay. Now, this is very interesting because the Bankruptcy Act come out in 1869. We then saw in 1874 the Birth and Death Act, and then we saw the Bills Exchange Act of 1882. Now, the Bills Exchange Act, written, the only part of it that's actually written in Latin, is the word accepted for value. Now, if you've got a bill, you'll notice on the credit card bill you have what's called at the bottom a bank gyro credit. Mm. Now this is creating credit in the world of corporations, because they can't generate credit in their own right. They have to fall us into doing it. Now this is interesting, because if you actually write across that at 45 degrees the words accepted for value, then turn it over and put your national insurance number, that bill is actually paid. Because you can't service a debt because we're in bankruptcy, which means that's why we have fiat money. We have pieces of paper that say, I promise to pay the bearer on demand the sum of £20. Well, the interesting part about it is the pound is not a currency, nor is sterling. It relates to pound sterling, silver, gold. Now, the first way they got rid of this was in 1914, and then this was done again officially in 1925 when they removed the gold standard. And this is basically what they've done, is they've removed gold, any usable metal or any valuable behind it, and given us what they call IOUs to use. Mm. We believe these things are valuable, so we trade these things. But what actually happens is, in trading these things backwards and forwards, there's another element, which are the socially dominant, basically the top masons and judges and all that, but know that any bill they get, they can write accepted for value across it, they can reverse it, put their national insurance number, and the Treasury will wipe it out.
That's amazing. Now, we've got about 2 minutes left, so I'm going to have to get you to answer this one quite quickly. But it's an interesting email that's coming from Kev in Glastonbury, who says, if this system works and people can overrule magistrates, not pay their tax, not pay their TV licence, not pay their car tax, can we not, in fact, bankrupt society? And would that mean, in turn, that people could not claim any benefits, there would be no dole money even for those that need it, and there would be no law against things like paedophiles and real criminals?
Right, I do see where he's coming from, but unfortunately he's coming from a society outlook. I don't actually know how this is going to sort itself out, because that's not for me to know at this time. I've now learned over the last 2 years that I only know things when I need to know, and things are brought to me when I need to know. I do know that this will naturally sort itself out. I know that everyone will get looked after, because I know in my heart that everyone will get looked after. I do see his point of view, and I understand that because I hear it from a lot of people. But when the top bin's been changed and we can start to correct things, then maybe we can create a world where we don't need such things as a dole money, and we don't need to rely on pittance from the society for us to live in. We can actually start to help each other and share things and actually create a world that we could live in where no one actually has to pay to live.
Fantastic. John, stay on the line because I want to have a chat to you off air. I'm just going to tell my listeners that website again, www.tpuc.org. Do check it out, do join up, do get involved in this, because it's very much you, the listeners, that will make these changes. We'll be back after the break with Major Ed Dames. We're going to be talking remote viewing in part three of the programme tonight.
To on a Friday night.
This is Now That's Weird with Ross Hemsworth.
Zoink, Scoob! I smell something weird!
It's not weird. It's Ross Hemsworth.
You're listening to Now That's Weird with Ross Hemsworth.
For nearly 20 years, Nexus has been the world's leading alternative news magazine. Read a selection of articles at nexusmagazine.com. Published every 2 months, Nexus is your best source of hard-to-get information behind the news, health, UFOs, future science. If you don't believe everything your government and their experts tell you is true, where do you look instead? Phone Nexus Magazine today on 01342 322 854 or see nexusmagazine.com. Available at all good news agents.
Email the show, Ross at nowthatsweird.co.uk.
Hi, this is your own pal, Ozzy Osbourne. I love listening to Ross Hemsworth and his guests on Now That's Weird. They make me feel f***ing normal.
Are you truly happy? Do you feel that there's more to life but don't know where to find it? More to Life magazine is the spiritual magazine to enlighten you with simple, easy-to-read articles on everything from angels, stress management and healing, through to Reiki, yoga and meditation. For just £13.50 for a year's subscription, we have the tools to help you discover what you really want from life. Visit moretolifemag.co.uk to find out more about us. Exploration is the path to a better life.
Visit the show's official website, nowthatsweird.co.uk, and meet the team behind the show.
Tonight, I'm gonna have myself a real good time. I feel alive.
As infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area that we call, now that's weird.
Now that's weird indeed. Welcome back to hour three of the show. It's me, Ross Hemsworth, and what a fantastic first 2 hours tonight. John Harris, tpuc.org. Can we really change the world we live in that simply, purely by challenging the fact that our law is run by a corporation? Our solicitors, our courtrooms are all limited companies. These people, in fact, don't have any power over you at all. It's amazing, isn't it, to think. But he has put this to practice. This isn't just something that he's come up with and said, well, go and try it. He's actually done it. He's been out there. He's challenged the magistrates. He's walked free from the courts. He's walked away from traffic offences. He's not paid his TV licence. He's not paying his tax. And one thing we didn't talk about in the first 2 hours, which is really important, is John has some stickers made up. And you can get them done quite easily on Vistaprint. In fact, I've just had a rubber stamp made, which should arrive next week with the same thing on it. The words, no contract, return to sender. Now, when you get a bill through from things like the Inland Revenue or TV licensing, what you do is you stick one of these stickers or the rubber stamp on the envelope. Don't open it. Just no contract, return to sender. Now, John's been doing this for some time, and he's not been paying any of those things, tax, TV licensing. So you too can go down that same route. Very simple, no contract. You've not entered into a contract, you've not entered into joinder, just return them. You will not pay them. And again, on the website, tpuc.org, he tells you how not to pay your council tax. They cannot get you to enter into a contract unless you sign a piece of paper saying, yes, I enter into this contract and therefore I will pay these things. It's going to rock the very foundations of the way our civilization works, not just in this country, but around the world. And it's something that you can only do for yourself. John can advise you, the website can advise you, the admins of the website can advise you, and on the forums of the website they're talking about this every single day now, with more and more information coming up. And more recently, the CSA now are one of the organisations being targeted by TPUC, in that it's performing illegally as a limited company. It's a trading corporation, the CSA. It has no power above you, and you can challenge its authority. And there are so many fathers out there that I know of from a film I was making a couple of years ago, which unfortunately never got finished, where they've been vindicated totally in the end, but purely because the truth has come out that an ex-wife will lie in a courtroom purely because of the way she feels about the breakup of a divorce. Now, because of the way the CSA operate, and because of the lies that are being told, we've had fathers who've been accused of the most incredible things, which they've then found not to be guilty of, in the courtroom by both the ex-wife and the CSA. Now, with this being the case, you could now challenge these things and say, hold on a minute, no, I'm not going to sit back and take this, because there's fathers that have committed suicide after being harassed by the CSA. There are a number of cases fought by Fathers for Justice where men have physically killed themselves because they cannot get out of the grasp of the CSA, screwing them for every single penny they have. The CSA believe, on paper, they have the rights to send you to prison, to take away your driving license, to take away your passport, to get liability orders against you. Well, I can tell you, the TPUC, in association with the Deadbeat Dads Association, another fantastic organisation, are doing something about it. So if you're in that situation now, and I'm not saying here that fathers shouldn't pay maintenance, because you have an ability, or not an ability, you have a right as a father to pay for the upkeep of your children. But that there has to be a limit. And if you've reached that limit, for instance with myself, I paid a full and final settlement to my ex-wife, which was a complete and full settlement of everything, the house, the money, whatever. The CSA don't recognise a full and final settlement, so what they now say is I've still got to continue paying. Now that's just plain wrong. And if you'd like to talk to me about that, it's ross at nowthatsweird.co.uk. Now, without further ado, let's talk about my next guest. We've talked quite a bit on this programme before about remote viewing, and you may remember we did a whole piece on this with the Stanford Research Institute some time back with Russell Targ, and we've not really touched on it so much of late, so my next guest is going to be somewhat intriguing. They actually call him Dr. Gloom, I think it is, on the Coast to Coast show, because of some of the visions he's had, and we're going to be talking to him about things like the kill shots in the course of the next hour. But I'm going to start by introducing my guest. It is Major Ed Dames. Ed, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Now, how did you get a name like Dr. Doom, it is, in fact?
I actually got that at the White House, when I used to brief as a briefing officer at the old executive office building. Most briefing officers would come in and brief the White House staff on Soviet, erstwhile Soviet Union, megatonnage and throw weights, but I wore a different hat. My hat was, dealt with biological warfare and some very, very insidious, still classified techniques that the Russians may or may not use against threats again. And those were so scary, they began to give me that nom de guerre.
Mm. Now, let's start at the beginning. You, of course, were in the military for many years. Just to talk us through how you came from being in the military to actually doing remote viewing.
I was a targeting officer at the very the celestial levels of the government, at the Office of Secretary of Defense in my country. I was one of five officers that picked U.S. targets for exploitation, for intelligence penetration, to gather intelligence about them and to actually penetrate using all of the tools at our disposal, agents, satellites, and other technologies to attempt to gain access to classified programs, mainly in the former Soviet Union, to a lesser degree in China. And in some cases, by hook or by crook, we could not answer the mail. We could not get information. We could not penetrate these very classified programs. For example, the SS-18 missile. We did not know its true capabilities. We did not know if we used decoys and the nature of its MIRVs and warheads. We could not penetrate the until I managed to do this, the Soviet biochemical warfare program, and I was awarded several medals for that. And those are present on my website. And I had to turn, as a tactic of desperation, to the remote viewing unit, which was one of my tools. These were not psychics. These were trained, skilled remote viewers. And I became so enthralled with that particular unit, I stepped down to take over as operations and training officer and for myself to be trained in the technology for that unit, and that was more than a quarter of a century ago, and I still love my job.
Mm. Now, remote viewing, something that we've spoken about on the program on many, many occasions, is this something anyone can do, or is it very much a skill that has to be taught?
Well, that's actually a non sequitur. It's both. We're born with an innate faculty to do this, as most of your listeners would agree, but it has to be cultivated as a skill, very much like music or running or whatever you want. We're born with innate abilities to perform those particular things, but they have to be turned into skills. And the problem with psychic performance was, we could not use psychics in the military intelligence business because when they're on target, they're really on, but the best psychics, that is. And when they're off, they're really off. And we needed something to be much more consistent that we could use when deadly force was authorized or in life or death situations, and psychics just didn't cut the mustard for us. So Stanford Research Institute, they studied the best natural psychics, the cognitive behavior when they were on target, and developed that into a model. And my job was to take that model down into the deep dark world of intelligence, the black world, massage it into a useful intelligence collection tool, evolve it, and then use it in military operations. So the discovery was essentially the syntax and grammar, if you will, for how our unconscious part of our mind communicates effectively to conscious awareness. And we did not have that before. It's sort of like sheet music. You have to have a standard, or like language. If you're not exposed to a language as you grow up, as a child, as a small child, you have the ability to develop a language. But if you're not exposed to one, as you grow up as an adult, you'll just communicate in grunts and whistles, those kind of things. So this was, the discovery was the structure for how unconscious communicates to conscious awareness.
Now, with remote viewing, I mean, a lot of people think of it on small terms, as in, oh, well, I can find out a little bit about this or find out a little bit about that. But, of course, this was used by the military in a series of things in the Cold War with the Russians. Now, when you're actually remote viewing, how much information can you actually achieve? Because there seems to be a sort of grey area here as to whether you can get bits or whether you can get a full picture.
There's no limit to the amount of detail we can get, but it's, there's no shortcuts in the process. Yes, it is a skill. First, it's a three-part process. You have to learn how to direct your unconscious, with like a Google or internet database search or any other database search, to a target. You have to execute the skill, like playing the piano piece itself, and then you have to analyze the data. So there's three parts right there. But analogically, it's very much like painting an oil painting, where at first the painter just prepares the canvas and puts up some mat and slaps up globs of color, and there's nothing really coherent there. The coherence emerges after time. That's the way we work in remote viewing, like a time-lapse photography, where you need lots of time on target, lots of light, and lots of work to get all the detail that we want. It's not, and that each session takes about 45 minutes to 2 hours. But we can maintain hold on a target, something that psychics can't do for a lot of technical reasons, for as long as we want. So we can extract as much detail as we want from a target until we satisfy the nature of the problem or the question.
Now, are some people better at this than others, or is it a case of once trained, everybody can do this to a certain level?
Could you repeat that, please?
Yeah, I mean, are some people better at remote viewing than others, or is it a case of...
As I mentioned, this is an innate faculty that we're born with, our birthright, but just like any other potential faculty or ability, some people are born, in this case, in our case, the case in point, with longer psychic antenna. So my job as a teacher, you know, I can scout out like a National Basketball Association scout and say, aha, that person really has a lot of potential. And instead, if I put this person through training, instead of them becoming a mere professional, they have the potential, these people with the innate long birthright antenna, they have the potential of becoming an all-star. What that means, where the rubber meets the road in our work, is this. For a given period of time, a trained professional like myself, I'm just an average psychic ability. I got to where I was by dint of labor, lots of hard labor. But someone who's born with above-average potential, after I train them, they can produce in a given amount of time, not only an hour, twice as much detail about a target that I do two remote viewing sessions to produce that much detail. So that's the basic difference.
Now, what about targets? Because a lot of people in remote viewing talk about targets, as in somebody will give you perhaps some numbers or a latitude, longitude, or whatever. But how important is it to have that information before you start doing the view?
It's critical. It's absolutely critical. It's the first part of the month. It's as critical as a Google. Let's use Google as an example. If you don't know what you're looking for, well, you'll never get an answer out using Google, right? If you have only a rough idea what you're looking for, you can start a search and after a while maybe cut through all the chaff and get what you want. But in our work is so difficult and hard. It takes a long time. It's a lot of work. We want to make sure that we have a specific target in mind, literally and figuratively. We have to actually formalize the search term. For instance, Osama bin Laden, that particular target, Osama bin Laden now, using a temporal qualifier, now, because mine's outside of time. Osama bin Laden exists in the past and possibly now and in the future, let's say, hypothetically. So we have to dictate to our unconscious where we want to be in time vis-a-vis that target. That's what we use now. That target would be different than Osama bin Laden's present location. In this case, Osama bin Laden becomes context, and the location becomes the target. So it's very specific, and we teach these skills.
Now, why is it, do you think, that if remote viewing works, bin Laden hasn't been found yet, if in fact he actually exists in the first place?
Oh, no, I published a map on Coast to Coast AM exactly where he's at. He's presently alive in mountains in Afghanistan, where essentially he's inside another, for all intents and purposes, Tora Bora. He's there. But there's political reasons also why we may or may not, why we might be able to get him but may not want to at a time. But that gets into other stuff.
Absolutely. Okay, we're going to take a break. My guest is Major Ed Dames. If you've got any questions for Ed, get them in now. It's Ross at nowthatsweird.co.uk. We'll be back right after these words.
Ross at nowthatsweird.co.uk.
Love and Light Events present
the Avalon Fairy Ball on Saturday the 3rd of October at the Glastonbury Town Hall, featuring artists Brian Frown, Josephine Wall, Linda Ravenscroft, Peter Prokovenich, Courtney Davis and more. At the Avalon Fairy Ball there'll be music from the Dolmen, fairy fashion shows and much, much more. The Fairy Fair is open between 11 and 5pm and entry is free. The Avalon Fairy Ball starts at 8pm.
Tickets are £20, available from thefairyball.co.uk or 01736 330 201.
Festival Times, the UK's number one free music paper. To find out where we're giving away our paper this summer, or keep up to date on band interviews and festival reviews, check out festivaltimes.co.uk for promotions and advertising, or to buy shares in the FT for only £1. Then call the team on 0203 2875 123. Festival Times, the new music paper for new music fans. Want to talk direct to potential customers? Then think digital. Think video. Think local. Think In Your Face Media. In Your Face is a brand new media proposition targeted at affluent Bristol areas. We're currently installing digital wireless posters in wine bars, gyms and cafes, as well as doctors and dentist surgeries. And while they're waiting, they could be reading or watching your advertising messages. The technology is blindingly clever. The screens are operated wirelessly via the internet, so we can program the dynamic content that will appear on every individual screen. Slots start from as little as 2 pence. For more details, call us on 0117 942 0670 or visit our website at inyourfacemedia.co.uk. Visiting Glastonbury and looking for somewhere nice to stay close to the town centre? Then have a listen to what some of our previous guests have said about Barham's B&B. A hidden treasure, real luxury and excellent accommodation. Looked after so well in a really nice friendly atmosphere. Another 2 days at the best ever B&B. A friendly welcome, lovely rooms and a tasty breakfast awaits you at Barham's B&B. Check out our website at barhamsbnb.co.uk and for booking inquiries, simply email Jean H. Barham at yahoo.co.uk or call us on 01458 837 875. Rates from just £35 a night. Take a walk back in time by visiting the Gauntlet Shopping Arcade in the High Street, Glastonbury. The Gauntlet is the town's newest shopping area, but set in an ancient walkway that oozes myth, legend and real history. You'll find a wide range of shops offering a wide variety of products and always a friendly welcome. Visit thegauntlet.biz. The Gauntlet, Glastonbury's premier shopping thoroughfare. Visit the show's official website, nowthatsweird.co.uk, and meet the team behind the show.
Yes, welcome back to Now That's Weird with me, Ross Hemsworth, and we're talking in this hour to Ed Dames. Now, just before we go back to Ed, let me remind you that I am working on the idea at the moment of a 2012 conference next year here in England, in Bath. And the reason we've chosen Bath, it's close to Bristol, it's got a mainline train station, bus station, all good services, and we thought it would be an ideal place to have such a conference. Now, I have to say, since announcing that I was looking into this, I've already had two or three sponsors contact me and say, look, we'd like to get involved with this. I've also had about six or seven speakers that have said, look, we'll do this one for nothing because, you know, 2012 is so important. So we are looking now towards putting this together. So keep an eye on the website for details, and as soon as I've got some more on this, I will let you know. Now, as you know, we've been talking about 2012 for some time here on this programme, and we've had various different speakers on the show talking about what they think may or may not happen. Not just in 2012, but in this big period of change. Well, you may well know that my guest tonight in Hour 3, Major Ed Dames, has done a film on a thing called The Kill Shot. Now, tell us about The Kill Shot, if you would, Ed.
The Kill Shot is a neologism. It's a term I coined for as we look over the horizon, because, again, mind is outside of time, and using remote viewing skills, you can direct your mind to the future, to a specific types of things and topics, in this case geophysical events. And years ago, many, many years ago, I've been in this business for a quarter of a century, but about 17, 18 years ago, when we were looking ahead, in fact I did a contract for Lawrence Rockefeller, and the, let's see, atmospheric ozone depletion, projected consequences, and remedial technologies. When I did that contract, we were looking ahead at the demise of the ozone layer. We spotted something, and the something, in, to make a long story short, was the sun, our star, going on a rampage and producing a series of mega flares, not just one or two, but a series of mega flares that take down Earth's magnetic shields and bring protons down to the deck, greatly heat the atmosphere, and consequently, many living things on Earth die. In a biblical sense, a third of the fishes in the sea, plants on Earth, and people over a period of time because there's no water, fresh water. So that's in essence what I termed the kill shot. And that appears to be fairly imminent in terms of geological time. We can't put our finger exactly on it, but we feel it's within the next 4 to 6 years.
Now, this sort of falls in line with something that went up on the NASA website for a short period, and I believe it's been taken down since, where NASA were predicting some heavy solar flare activity in or around the late period of 2012.
Well, I predicted it publicly 2 weeks prior to it happened. I said the sun's about to go on a rampage, and 2 weeks later, in 2000, at the 6th, I believe it was, the sun produced a flare that went off the scale. They had to develop a new scale for this flare. If that flare had been directed at Earth, it would have actually accomplished what I just before mentioned. Lots of us would have gone down. But that is what I termed, when I predicted this, I said there's going to be a shot across the bow, kind of a warning shot. And after that happens, all bets are off. The time's relatively short between that and this series of events that we call the kill shot.
Now, do you think this is set in stone? Because a lot of psychics now are saying that the future is not set in stone. We have the ability as humans to change our future or prepare for it.
We have the ability as individuals right now on this planet. Now, don't get me wrong. I think that on other worlds and possibly our own world in the future, humans en masse could change things. But we're not a coherent people right now. So we have the ability to change to a certain degree our own futures, but not geophysical events. Those are locked in stone. In fact, we know as professional remote viewers that if you can indeed remote view a future event, it already exists in time. And the geophysical events, the big ones, are rock solid.
Now, with regards to the kill shot, I mean, a lot of people would probably agree that something like this is going to happen. But what about other things that you've seen on remote viewing? Obviously, you've seen parts of past, present, and future. What are the outstanding things that have come to you, good and bad, in those sessions?
Contact is one of my for the last quarter of a century, it's been one of my key protocols. I've been out in the field with Jacques Vallée, who was the model for Professor Trafant in Close Encounters of the Third Kind and all that. But the reality of it is there are small groups of us who are interacting with something out there. And I believe that higher intelligence is that higher mind, which we use in remote viewing, seeks out higher intelligence and also spiritual realities to some degree. But higher intelligence, yes. And that's why, you know, some of us are out there saying we need help. We need intervention. We want to invite intervention because we're going down as a species. So that's my key agenda. Remote viewing is a tool to facilitate that.
Now, there's some interesting conspiracy theories if we look online, Ed, at things like the moon landings, whether Hitler in fact survived and went to South America. These things, I would have thought that remote viewing could answer these equations now, so to actually convert from conspiracy theory to fact or otherwise. Have you looked at anything like that?
Ross, there are no secrets in the world of remote viewing. There's no secrets. There's nothing you can hide. So any trained remote viewer, the sky's the limit. I could tell you what the most top secret defense and offensive weapons are for the United States, Japan, China, Russia. There's nothing that's hidden in terms of this. So we bypass all the red tape and the If I were not, if I had not been at celestial levels of intelligence, if I had not learned remote viewing and be where I am today, I can very much empathize with civilians who don't really know what's going on and will go to their graves believing something that may be wrong or not knowing something that's very important. But as remote viewers, there's no secrets. You just take a look, do the work, and you may not be happy or like the answer that you have, whether it's your own medical and health trajectory, or whether it's the trajectory of your country or the fate of a nation. You may not be happy with that, or you may be, but it's just facts. What we deal with are just information. The results may be profound in terms of what you do with the information, but it's just information, and there are no secrets.
Now, on that very point, and I mean, let's come back to the main question with regards to conspiracy theories. The American moon landings are something that's been the cause of one of the biggest conspiracy theory debates in recent years, and the arguments seem to be pretty well weighted on both sides. Is this something you've looked into yourself, and what do you think? Do you think we landed on the moon in 1969 or not?
Yeah, we did, but that's a moot point right there in terms of conspiracy theory. In our work as remote viewers, it's just as simple as pie. I won't go into all the technical background, but there are many ways to handle this problem, but what we like are the simple stuff. So what we do is we take a photo that allegedly or purportedly shows Neil Armstrong or somebody standing on the moon, right?
Mm-hmm.
We use that as target reference material, and without appending any ideas to it whatsoever, we use that as a target. And then, and 45 minutes later, we have the actual attendant events, all the dynamics and the mechanics that are around that. So those may include, hypothetically, a movie studio. If we got that, well, it was fake. If we're on the moon, the remote viewer is not going to be able to breathe well, blah, blah, blah. They're going to actually be describing technical stuff and dust and things like that, and the moon. So it's QED as far as we're concerned. Remote viewing does an end run around the thinking process. It's direct knowledge. That's why I like my work. I'm not easily entertained. I would not have stayed in this business for a quarter of a century if I wasn't in awe of it, and if it wasn't was the best thing around.
Now, but both the US and the USSR, and to a degree the UK as well, have all admitted in the past that they use remote viewing in the Cold War and for military intelligence. Do you think it's still going on?
No, not in the UK and the US, but it is going on in India and China. China has something else. They have an active program. Not only do they have a remote viewing program, but they have a telekinesis, psychokinesis program as well, too, which we don't have in the States. Now, I'm the keeper of the keys. The Matrix Intelligence Agency is my own private intelligence agency. What I did in terms of evolving the skill in our country. And we watch closely nuclear terrorist threats. The sum of all fears can't be stopped by orthodox intelligence agencies. They're not going to catch it. We are. But China has something more than just science, psychic intelligence. They have a program to try to influence at a distance using mind over matter, telekinesis, psychokinesis, guidance systems on missiles and things like that. And we're getting caught way behind the power curve in that area.
Okay, let's go to the emails. Got a couple of emails coming quite quickly in the hour. We tend to get more in the latter part of the hour, but let's go with these two first off. Stiff is a regular listener from the chat room. Says, on Coast to Coast, Major E said he was looking for Steve Fawcett. How come he never found him, and is he still living in the Ukraine?
Is Steve Fawcett living in the Ukraine?
I guess that's what he means, yeah.
No, I don't think so. I live in the Ukraine. In fact, I just returned to California 48 hours ago from my Ukraine.
Oh, perhaps that's what he means then. Are you still living in the Ukraine?
Steve Fawcett was found before we got there.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, because that made news some time back, didn't it?
Yeah, we said we were going in after him, and then they found him before we got there. That's all.
Okay. Right, one from Jed in New Jersey in America, and he said, Edge, you've got somewhat of a reputation of late of being in it more for the money than the goods. How would you say to your listeners tonight that this isn't about money?
It's about both. I'm a businessman. I make a living from collecting intelligence and teaching. So what's to say? I'm an expert. I'm the best in my field at what I do, and I also make a living out of it. Any other questions?
That's a good answer, well answered. Now, final one actually that I'm just going to go to now before we go into the break. This is an interesting one, and I've cut this down a little bit because it's quite a long email, so I'll just cut it down to the basics. And it asks, if somebody signs up, and this is from Colin, who's listening in Glasgow in Scotland this evening. He says, if somebody signs up for an RV course remotely via the internet, how can you train them without being there person to person?
Well, I market a series of DVDs that we essentially taped all of our workshops, our professional level workshops, to the public, and we have protocols that can be taught via these DVDs. Otherwise, in terms of my integrity, I would have never put them on the streets, and they're very effective. If one goes to learnrv.com and goes into the forums, the teaching forums, where I teach for free, even advanced methods, I don't charge for this. All of my students are there. You can see their work. You can see us talk about that. And I'm there every day teaching, and we don't charge for that. And the methods are effective enough to teach via DVDs. It took a long time to develop those protocols, but we did it.
Okay, keep those emails coming in, ross@nowthatsweird.co.uk. Now, Ed, if someone signs up for a course in something like remote viewing, what are the basic skills they need in the first place? Because I would imagine that someone's got to be clear-minded, they've got to be focused, they've got to have a certain background.
Not to interrupt you too much, but absolutely nothing. You go in with a clean slate, we don't care what your background is, or what your preconceived notions are, or whatever. We'll just say, that's nice. Now put your pen on the paper and do exactly what you're told. Everybody's trained the same way, just like any other skill. Let's use a good analogy, ice skating. Suppose you had never seen an ice skater before, and I, as your coach, potential coach, took you into an ice skating rink and said, you're going to put these shoes on your feet with this thin metal blade on the bottom. You're going to tie it tight. You're going to go out there on that slippery ice, and you're going to perform after I teach you how to do it like a ballerina. Yeah, and you would say, that's insane. And you know what the first thing you would do, based upon experience, when you hit that ice. You would fall flat on your derriere like all of us have done and will do, continue to do. But with the right coach and the right teacher, you will perform like a ballerina after the training is over. So it doesn't matter, me as your teacher, what you think about the training. I've taught scientists who are skeptics. I've taught everybody. Their life changes once that pen hits the paper and they see what they're doing, especially when I'm not there in the room and they do the same thing. Then they have to say, how did I do that? And then their life changes.
Now, I spent some time with Russell Targ last year at UFO Congress in Laughlin. Have you ever worked with Russell?
I know him well. He knows me well. In fact, we were just, he keeps asking me the same question at the International Opium Association every year. It's a technical question. I don't know why he does that. But yes, I know him.
Now, how would you say you differ to the instructions that he puts out to people with remote viewing?
He's not a teacher. He's a scientist. So he looks at it from a scientist's perspective and says, I think I know how this works and how it's working. This is what I want you to do. Whereas my job is I better get it right. I better train you to do it right every single time. No mistakes and no excuses for getting it wrong. Where he looks at the performance and at the results and then sticks that into a statistical model and says, okay, based upon the past, this is how I think you've done and what's going on. I don't deal with that. You better get it right. I'm your teacher, and you better darn well hit the target, because I taught you how to do it right, and you better do it right every single time. That's a whole lot different than being a scientist.
Absolutely. Okay, my guest is Major Ed Dames. Any questions for Ed, get them in now. ross@nowthatsweird.co.uk. We'll be back right after this.
The show the world listens to on a Friday night. This is Now That's Weird with Ross Hemsworth.
Are you truly happy? Do you feel that there's more to life but don't know where to find it? More to Life magazine is the spiritual magazine to enlighten you with simple, easy-to-read articles on everything from angels, stress management and healing, through to Reiki, yoga and meditation. For just £13.50 for a year's subscription, we have the tools to help you discover what you really want from life. Visit moretolifemag.co.uk to find out more about us. Exploration is the path to a better life.
The Crystal Sound Bowl Experience. relax in private surroundings close to Glastonbury Town Centre and benefit from the powerful energies created by crystal sound bowls. Experience deep relaxation, boost the immune system and release tension at a very deep level. The soothing yet stimulating sounds resonate with the chakras, helping the body to be in its natural state, peaceful and at ease. For discussions, consultations and appointments, please telephone Steve Dash on 07768 252323 or email steve-at-hotmail.co.uk. The Crystal Sound Bowl Experience.
The Connections Magazine, the leading independent free guides to personal development, natural therapies and all things mystic. The three regional magazines cover the Southwest, London and Southeast and the Midlands, with articles and columns by Dr. Alan Sweeney, Barbara Brennan, Dr. Keith Hearn, Joseph Sarah, Karen Kay, Gail Force and many more. Why not advertise from only £230 a year? Your events, therapies, centres, courses and workshops, retreats, readings, products for sale, organic and vegetarian shops. With us to our thousands of like-minded readers. See theconnections.co.uk or phone 01747 823 424. Hurry, time is ticking. Whether it's for fitness, for fun, or for the family, Avalon Leisure Centres have something for everyone. Visit us now at Froome Leisure Centre, Wells Leisure Centre, and Strode Swimming Pool and Fitness Centre in Street. Visit our website for details at avalonleisure.co.uk or call now for great savings on our lifestyle membership scheme on 01458 444915. Quoting GlastonburyRadio.net. That's 01458 444915. In 1971, US President Nixon declared a war on cancer. 30 plus years later, it continues, taking the lives of loved ones and consuming billions in currency all over the world. Why is that, one must ask? A prudent question, as 15 plus cultures around the planet remain free of this and other diseases that are rife in the modern world. What are the factors in their lives that enable this to be? Well, actually, the answers have been known for a very, very long time. For further information, visit apricotshop.co.uk, whose mission is researching, providing information and supplying carefully selected products that potentially provide protection for people's health, along with reducing the risk of contracting lifestyle-related diseases. For you and your family's well-being first, prevention is undoubtedly the key to a vibrant existence.
Email the show, Ross, at nowthatsweird.co.uk.
Yes, welcome back to the show. We're in hour three. You're listening to Now That's Weird with me, Ross Hemsworth. And just before we return to my guest, let me just say a big thank you to Chris and everyone that organised the Weird 09 conference last week in Warminster. I mentioned it earlier on in the show, but it was a fantastic conference, very well organised, well put together, and well done, you guys. It was really good, and I'm looking forward to doing it next year with you as well. Really, really good. Now, people have been asking me where they can see me live in the coming months. I'm going to be doing Probe International in Blackpool, Lytham St Anne's, the weekend of October the 3rd and the 4th. The following weekend, I'm going to be at the Cornwall UFO Conference speaking there. Then I'm taking a bit of a break over the Christmas period, and the next one that I've got booked in the diary is UFO Congress in Laughlin, where I'll be speaking, I think on the first day now, on the issue of conspiracy theory v conspiracy fact. I'm on stage, I think, for something like an hour and 40 minutes, and it's going to be a fairly good presentation, that one, because it's going to be breaking down some of the things like the moon landings, the Project Serpo, 9/11, 7/7, and looking at what facts there are behind some of these conspiracy theories. Are they just theories, or are there now facts backing some of these up? So don't forget, also for Laughlin next year, we're going to be doing a tour from the UK, which starts off flying out from the UK to Phoenix, up to Sedona, spending a few nights there, then off to the Grand Canyon, up to Area 51, or as close as we can get, then up to Rachel, to the Little Alien, and then from there back down to Laughlin for the conference. And the price of £1,500 includes all your transfers, flights, and your tickets to the UFO Congress itself. So it's a good package, and you can find details at megalithictours.com. That's megalithictours.com. And I've got to tell you, next Friday, I've got an interview with Mike Oram, telling us about something that happened to him when he went out to UFO Congress, and it's going to be a really interesting interview, so that's in next week's show in Hour 2. Now, lots more to come on Now That's Weird over the weeks to come as well. We've got some great guests being lined up, and the details will be up on the website very, very soon about that. But let's get back to tonight. We're talking to Major Ed Dames, the man probably synonymous with remote viewing around the world. And Ed, I've got to say, when you're doing remote viewing and you're talking about viewing past, present and future, surely some of the world's great mysteries could be solved by remote viewing. I mean, for instance, can we tell what is going to happen in 2012? Can we tell how it's all going to pan out in North Korea? Is there going to be a nuclear missile attack between India and Pakistan, which a lot of people are talking about right now? Some of these things I would have thought remote viewers could answer.
Well, about 15 years ago, we as professional MOPers, we were interested in the next use of a nuclear weapon in anger, which I think is a good question. And so we actually used that as a research project. And in no uncertain terms, this was 15 years ago, I've gone public many times with that, the next use of the nuclear weapon in anger, and I said this a decade and a half ago, would be on the Korean Peninsula by the North Koreans. Now, at that time, it was all speculation about whether or not they had enough plutonium to build a weapon, perhaps 1.5 weapons or whatever. But now, it's that particular prediction, and it's not really a prediction as far as remote viewers are concerned, because the event already exists in time. It's not a forecast, it's not a prediction, because mine, for us, is outside of time. We're looking at the event itself, but we're saying this exists in time already. So, yeah, we do things like that. Some of your, I'm not sure if you're aware, some of your listeners may be interested that Sir Ben Kingsley played me in the movie Suspect Zero. I do a lot of work on missing children and child murderers, and this is free, we don't charge for this, worldwide, Japan, U.S., so I had to train Sir Ben Kingsley as a remote viewer for that movie, and I played a cameo in the movie myself as a FBI remote viewing instructor. Tom Cruise asked me to do that. All the editing was done in Tom Cruise's office. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, and it was great to work with Sir Ben.
Yeah, he's a great actor, absolutely wonderful actor.
He's a great student, a remote viewing student, too. So when you see him in that movie, and I trained him to do that, it's dramatized, but to a certain degree, that's what I do in my free time, search for child murderers.
That's wonderful work. I mean, just going back to Ben Kingsley for a moment, I mean, how did Ben take to that, you know, being told how to remote view?
Actually, he was afraid at first. He was afraid that he would actually lose his mind because he's such a good actor, and he would entirely absorb the role. He said, "Will I lose my mind?" You know, something like that. I said, no, you're not. Sir Ben, this is a skill. In fact, after I gave him a familiarization course, after a couple of days, I was doing a lecture, just anecdotally, and I needed to use an example to illustrate one particular thing about our work. And I recalled something at the end of the movie, AI, Artificial Intelligence, that would be very apropos to illustrate this point. And I turned to him and I said, "Sir Ben." He said, "Yes, Major Dames." I said, "Did you see the movie AI?" And he looked at his classmate, the director of the movie, Elias Marriage, and they looked back at me, and he said, "Major Dames, I was the narrator on that movie and also played the voice of the techno." I felt so embarrassed. I could feel my face turn red. Talk about foot and mouth disease.
We all do it from time to time, don't worry.
Yeah.
You know, one of my classics was I was doing a show about the 60s on radio a while back, and I actually rung up to one of the agents to try and get one of the 60s stars on the show, only to find out he died about 5 years before. We all do it. But going back to the whole idea of remote viewing, and if any of the listeners want to check out Ed's website, it is learnrv.com. That's learnrv.com. If somebody wants to get involved in this and do this, I mean, can they actually answer for themselves some of their own personal questions? Because let's face it, we all run by a belief system, Ed. We either believe in God or we believe in Satan. And in fact, one of the questions coming up for you is on that subject in a moment from one of my listeners. But when we remote view things like that, can we actually answer the equations that we all worry about?
Well, first of all, realize that we're dealing with the unconscious here. It's not just the idea of the unconscious in terms of Carl Jung or any of the other cognitive or theoretical psychologists. We're dealing with a higher mind. Remote viewing is a collaboration with one's higher mind. And you have to realize that the egoic or lower mind, the one that we deal with day to day, the tip of the iceberg, is really subordinate to the higher mind, or should be, but we don't do that in our life. We allow our egoic mind to control us. That's why we always pick the right job and the right mate, right? And you know, and things go wrong, we don't turn to that higher mind.
Hmm.
So we're availing ourselves of something greater, the supermind, when we're opening. And yes, I use it myself. I used to feel selfish doing this because I thought, okay, you know, I shouldn't use this for myself, only other people. But one day I said, you know, I'm kind of interested in using it for myself to find a mate, which I did in Ukraine, of all places. My optimum health trajectory, anti-aging, aging inhibitors, skin care, you name it. Once Katie barred the door, once I started using it for myself, I said, hey, what about this? What about this? What about this? So once you formulate the cue, the search term correctly, know how to remote view, and know how to analyze the data, yeah, it's an open book. You become an open book, and it gets much deeper. You learn much more about yourself. Most people have a destiny, as most of your listeners would agree, but we don't see that destiny. We usually meet a fate which interrupts our path to a destiny. In a remote viewing, you can actually see what the destiny is. Then it is up to you whether or not you want to act upon the information, right?
Absolutely.
And, you know, for instance, if I remote view my optimum health trajectory, which is something we teach in a remote viewing course, because it's very important to people if they're dying of a disease. We've saved lots of lives in our business. But if I remote view my optimum health, what I could do to optimize my health, then in no uncertain terms, in priority order, I'll get those things that are either interfering with my health or either can augment it. Bam, bam, bam.
Yeah.
And every time I do that, I'll get the same thing. Unless I act upon the information and either stop doing it or do that, and then after I remote view the self-same cue again, I'll get something else, which will be penultimate to that first term. So yes, we can use it for ourselves as well as all those tactical, strategic, enigmatic, and galactic stuff.
Absolutely, I think I should enroll for this myself. Right, let's get back to the emails. Hi Ross, can you ask Ed what happened when he remote viewed Satan? And that's from Shamrock, one of our regular listeners in America.
I did that because I was interested in the Columbine Massacre. Well, Columbine Massacre was interesting because it was the first time that I knew about in history where children killed children intentionally. There really wasn't any precedent that I knew about for children killing children. And I wondered, what is going on? Is this idea of evil really extant? And I pursued that, and along the path, I wanted to check out this idea of Satan. And so I remote viewed it. And the idea turned out to be an actual entity. And the entity was pretty scary. The idea of the entity was a very cold, crystalline, extremely beautiful, cold. The words escape me, but I wanted out. But it was looking right back at me, and I don't mean allegorically. So that's why it was like, this is a door you don't want to open. So that's why I did that.
It must have been quite scary, because at the end of the day, I mean, if Satan is all that he's supposed to be, then he would have known you were there, even in remote viewing, what he was doing.
But you're talking about an entity, an angelic entity that's so powerful, they know everything anyway. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing new to it, whatever it is. It's just new knowledge to me.
Well, this falls in nicely with the next email, actually, because the next one comes in from Glenda, who's listening in Manchester, England this evening, and she says, can you actually get hurt when remote viewing?
Say that again, please.
Can you get hurt, as in attacked, or, you know, is it safe?
Oh, no, absolutely not. No, it's all a vicarious experience. It's an information collection skill. It's powerful. For instance, it's analogous to going into a theater and watching, let's say, a movie about the killing fields in Cambodia. you may come out of that theater, have to go out of the theater and vomit and cry because of the information that it, how it impacted you. But don't forget that all that that was a phantasmagorical display of flashing light and color, or black and white, on a big flat screen. You were not part of that experience. It was totally vicarious, right? If you had actually been there in Cambodia at the time, that would be a different, that would be a totally different thing. So the person that went out and vomited and cried can walk back in the theater and resume the film. That's analogous to what we've got here. And there's some very beautiful things too. Let me give you one short vignette. Once I was in love with a woman who I trained as a remote viewer. I thought, okay, I got to give her something special. It's her birthday. I'm going to give her a target, a topical target, not a discrete target, of, let's see, God's infinite love, which is a topic. I thought, oh, I have no idea where she'll go, but it's got to be nice, right? Mm-hmm. She comes out of a session after doing this solo and says, "Why? I thought you loved me. Why did you give me this?" It was a sketch of John Hinckley in the electric chair and death row. John Hinckley was a serial killer in my country. And I thought, what, my God, what happened? This is totally at the antithesis of what I wanted, and then I got it.
Mm.
God's infinite love extends even to the most hardened of killers. I'm human. My love doesn't extend that far.
Mm, that's
and
it.
So, you see what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
When you go into to the collective, there's only one mind. Think of it as the mind of God or the collective, the global mind. When you go into that, it's a whole lot bigger. The whole is much bigger than the sum of us puny little parts.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, I've always believed that we are all part of the one, and the one is part of the all. We're part of the main universe, and we can connect to any part of it.
Well, and I think I think this is part of the creator experiencing its creation. That's my own personal philosophy. It's nothing to do with remote viewing.
Okay, final email, because we're running short of time now. No name on this one, it's just anonymous. Says, please could you ask your guest about his relationship with Aaron Donahue, another remote viewer?
Aaron was one of my star students in the past. But in my business, if the only problem I have found in 2.5 decades of teaching this is, if a student is mentally imbalanced to begin with, once they learn remote viewing, it'll send them over the edge. That's happened in about 4 or 5 cases, both the military and civilian, thousands of people that I've trained. That's happened. So it's real, and Aaron's a good example of that.
Ed, it's been an absolute delight talking to you. We have run out of time, but I hope you'll come back and do the show again in the future, because there's so much more to ask you about this, and it's such an intriguing area, isn't it?
Well, I'm in awe of it still. I've been doing it, again, for a long time, and I'm still in awe of it. It is an incredible thing. We're just still scratching the surface.
Absolutely. The website again, www.learnrv.com. Ed, have a fantastic weekend. Thanks for joining us on Now That's Weird.
It's been my pleasure.
Cheers now. Bye-bye.
Bye.
There you go. That's Major Ed Dames, and without a doubt, one of the leading names in remote viewing in the world today. Well, it's been an interesting show tonight, hasn't it? I mean, what with that, and then 2 hours of John Harris. And John, as he said, is going to come back in and do something in the studio with us as well, so there'll be a lot more to talk about on that. It's a groundbreaking idea that John stumbled across, and I hope you found the show really interesting tonight, looking into that and going for it. It certainly makes you think, doesn't it? And that's what it's all about. Now That's Weird has always been a show where we've tried to just make you think. And if you change your mind or change your opinions, that's great. But as long as we open that mind and make you think, we've done our job here. And thanks as usual to Penny, my beloved, for doing the emails, looking after the site for us this evening. And it's been very busy with emails tonight as well, so getting through those and putting through the ones that are going to air and the ones that aren't is no easy task, believe me. So thanks to Penny for that. Thanks to Kenton and John. Thanks also to Mark, who's been working a lot on the web with us this week. And thanks to all of you, the listeners, who without you, there'd be no show, would there? Have a fantastic weekend wherever you are. Hope the weather improves a bit for you. We'll be back next week with more live. Now That's Weird.